Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third and final piece of the fifth annual NWR Telethon recording. This is the final 3 hours of our big day back on November 7th. Oh, it seems like a long time ago. We had a big day, and again, we've, as of this recording, raised a good bit over $6,000 for Child's Play. And that is thanks to many, many generous donors and many great special guests, participants in the live event, and of course the fantastic staff of Nintendo World Report, who all banded together to put together a really difficult and challenging and exciting event where a thousand things can go wrong, and ultimately very few did. So I want to thank everyone one last time, and I hope you'll enjoy the conclusion to our recording. We'll see you next time.
All right, so I guess we'll go ahead and kick things off. Just so you know, I'm Danny Bivens, the host and editor of the Famicast, and we have a show all about Japan and Japan-related games. And so first I'll go ahead and introduce my crew. So like I said, I'm Danny, and we're also joined by Mr. James Charlton.
Hey, Danny, you're welcome, as always. Good morning, and good evening, and good night. Delete as appropriate.
Exactly. And also Ty Sugart.
Yeah, it's 9 a.m. here in Japan, and I've already started drinking.
Jesus Christ.
Nice. And again this year, we have some special guests from 8-4. You might remember Mr. J.J. Epperson.
Hi. I'm supposed to be watching Kamen Rider, I think.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, that's a really bad scheduling error there, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And also...
But we have it recorded.
Yeah, and also I think for the first time on this podcast, Mr. John Ricciardi.
Mr. John Ricciardi has left the building.
He didn't hit the join button. Hold on, I can... It's my job usually to corral John, so...
Okay. Well, like I said, we have a pretty exciting show today, so a lot of cool Japanese stuff to talk about, and I think we'll just kind of go ahead and kick it off. So as most of you guys know out there, obviously there was a Nintendo Direct late in the week, and you know there's a lot of stuff that was pretty much the same across all regions, but you know there was a few things that were kind of Japan only that I think are definitely worthy to talk about. And so I guess one of the first cool things that I saw on the Direct was, so Ace Combat, I know it's kind of one of those things, but I don't know, maybe should have died years ago, to some people, but, you know, they still make these games every once in a while. And
right.
So, you know, they had an Ace Combat game, it's called Assault Horizon on the 3DS back in 2011, and they're kind of doing a remake of it called Ace Combat in Japan Cross Rumble Plus, which is basically just the same name with a plus sign at the end. Great job.
Hi, guys.
And if you read it a different way, it could just be Cross Rumble Cross.
Yeah,
they're getting very meta with their naming here.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, the coolest thing about this, I was actually kind of surprised to see this, is that not only can fighters sport some kind of cool like Nintendo designs, like, you know, a Zelda-themed plane or a Mario-themed plane, they do this, I guess, via amiibos. So the game actually has amiibo support.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I thought that was kind of surprising that, you know, this early on, still third parties here in Japan are already getting kind of into the amiibo business.
Are we talking about Ace Combat here?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
Okay.
Also, the news yesterday, I think it was yesterday, the day before, they were saying that they're in talks with third parties for doing third-party amiibos, so look out for a little aeroplane amiibo coming soon.
Yeah, I don't know, like, I'm not really interested in amiibos that where the functionality is just, like, you get a skin for the thing that you're controlling. Like, I mean, that's not really gonna get me to buy an Ace Combat. Well, I mean, I would never, ever in a million years buy an Ace Combat. I download a demo, maybe, but like adding amiibo support, maybe if you're like a hardcore Mario fan, a hardcore Ace Combat fan, And it's just like finally my two worlds have collided. And now I can go to the promised land. This would be exciting. But I mean, if it's this simple to implement for other games too, maybe that's cool. I like you can use your amiibo for things, but I'm not going to actively buy an Ace Combat for an amiibo just for.
JJ, is that you talking, JJ?
Hi, John.
Hey, I can't even tell the difference between you and me. Our voices.
Oh, yeah. Well, it doesn't hurt. I mean, we're both
now
six.
I see why everybody's complaining about us on the podcast. It totally sounds like me. Hi, guys, by the way. I came in quietly in the background.
Mr. John Ricciardi.
Yes, and I'm sick and have a cold, so I probably sound even more like JJ because he's always sick.
No, currently I am legitimately have a cold.
Well, you know, as a British guy, I can say that you guys do not sound alike, you know, because, you know, you Americans do all sound alike to me, but, like, you two guys do not.
You what?
So don't worry about it. Who is that? Danny? Ty? I can't tell you guys.
So while you guys were talking in the background, I was actually opening an amiibo because we got our Smash Brothers this week, and I've been sick, so I haven't been able to play yet, but I did actually open the package up right now, and I'm holding Mario in my hands as we speak.
That is a terrible excuse, John. You are sick, therefore you should have plenty of time to play video games.
I know, but I was in bed basically like all day yesterday. This is basically the first time I've been out of bed in like 36 hours. So these
are American amiibos, right?
Yeah. Yeah, although I don't know that they'd be any different, but yeah.
Mario doesn't hold a hamburger in the Japanese version. So.
Right, of course.
Yeah. It's probably the main difference.
Yummy.
Yeah, no, they're actually really nice, though. I mean, the quality of this thing is pretty sturdy. I'm sure you guys have already messed with them at events and stuff, but I've actually never touched one before now. But it's really nice, and it's pretty light, too.
We live in Japan. There are no events in Japan.
That's true. Is everybody on this call in Japan?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir.
We know nothing about E3 or anything like that.
Don't ask us about any movies coming out, because we haven't heard of them.
Did you guys pre-order any amiibos?
Not yet. I'm
waiting for them to show up in the UFO catchers. They're just like that right price range.
What a free.
That's a possibility. John, what does it feel like? Is it like kind of, because I know like a lot of 3D printed figures and stuff can kind of feel like a little rough because they're like made out of weird material, but does it feel like, you know, does it feel nice? Does it look okay?
Yeah, it feels pretty smooth. It looks great and it feels really smooth. It has kind of like a rubbery feel to it, but not too much, like not so much where it feels cheap. It's like slightly rubbery, but kind of feels like plastic, like in a good way, not in like a cheap way. I would say it's definitely nicer than I was expecting. And they're like super light too, which is nice. Cause when you see them, you're kind of like, that's going to be like a drag. I don't think anyone's going to be carrying these around everywhere they go. But I mean, if you go to your friend's house to play Smash Brothers or whatever, and you want to take your thing with you, it doesn't look like it would be much of a hassle.
They're already selling amiibo cases. Like, have you seen those things?
Are you serious?
Yeah. I think you can see it on Amazon. They're just like this huge, not that huge, but it just looks like a pouch, but you know, it can hold, you know, every amiibo or whatever. Let's see if anyone's going to buy every single one. Well, I don't know. Some people might.
Maybe. I think these things are going to be awesome when they you know, start coming out where there are RPGs where you can use them. Like, you know, Pokemon. If Pokemon had these things, forget about it. Like, I could see them being really, really cool. But like for action games and stuff like that, yeah, I'm not going to go out of my way to carry it around with me, I don't think.
Well, one could argue about the Pokemon ones, you know, with the Pokemon Rumble, whatever the hell it was, you know, they had the special NFC figures, where I know in Japan you could only get them at the, you know, the Pokemon Center, which is ridiculous. And I think it might have been out of just like maybe blind box type of stuff too. So that's
I think it was a gacha machine, actually.
Oh, good Lord.
Well, the quality was about a gachapon, you know, kind of standard, right? So it's probably deserved to be in a gachapon machine.
Exactly.
Slash the garbage can.
Yeah. So I guess to
Mm-hmm. Sorry, somebody just pasted in the chat the Ace Combat special Idol Master skins.
That was me, actually.
Of course it was Utah.
I mean, that was the first thing I thought of. This stuff is not new and strange to Ace Combat.
True, you're right.
Oh, I have to see this now.
Is you this gotta, like back when Idolmaster was still relevant in the eyes of Otaku?
Yeah, you gotta bring that Idolmaster back or no sale for me.
Oh, okay, that's not as bad as I thought. I imagined the girl's legs kind of spread as the wings kind of thing like that. Thank God they didn't go that way.
That's a different age range.
This combat sure has changed over the years.
So yeah, amiibos in this combat, great.
I guess it means like anybody with a shitty game can put their amiibos on it.
Hatsune Miku peach dress.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Sure, why not?
That happening. Yeah.
No, you're not supposed to agree with me.
No, I think it's a good idea. The big Nintendo.
Okay.
Piggyback on the popularity of Miku or AKB48, maybe.
What about Monster Hunter 4 something or 5?
That would be interesting.
Would be.
The cats might have different hats or something. I don't know.
Well, if they could make like feline amiibos or like a Rathian amiibo or a Devil Joe amiibo, I would if I could take that Devil Joe and put it in the Smash Brothers and terrorize people, that would be fun. I would do that.
When they were talking about third party amiibos, the first thing that came to my mind was Monster Hunter. Yeah, they're gonna do like a feline one, right? Because it's a cute character. It fits in with the look, you know.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm sure it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah,
seems like
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it exists already in a warehouse somewhere.
It's something else I wanted to point out just about opening up this pack. I'm just like going through the stuff they sent us. Is Smash Brothers actually has a physical manual? Like, I don't know. I haven't seen a game with a real manual in it in probably like a year now. But yeah, it's got a full on like. 30-40 page manual, full color.
Like move list or what?
Yeah, it's got, it looks like basically it's got a few pages on controls and then, yeah, it's just got like a whole bunch of pages on fighters. Actually, I guess it's not as huge as it looks because it's like 3 different languages. But, you know, it's got like 6 or 7 pages with move lists for all the characters, which is kind of cool.
I look forward to not reading it.
You're not supposed to read them, you're supposed to smell them.
Yeah. I know, right?
Did you
guys... Hey man, huff this manual.
Did anyone get the physical Smash 3DS game?
Or I did.
You get download one? Well, that has a like a well, not a booklet, but like a I don't know a poster. I guess.
Yeah, it's like a fold-out.
Yeah. Okay then.
I ended up getting the I basically stole it from work, but the Famitsu 100-page Here's How to Play Smash Brothers book. And that was really nice. I think, at least in Japan, you know, a lot of the times these bigger games, especially like with Monster Hunter, they do this for Monster Hunter 2, but Famitsu will release along with the release of the game, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a 100-page guide on how to play the game. It's like a mini strategy guide that you can just like take out of the magazine and have it with you while you're playing. And like for hardcore gamers, like those of us on this podcast, it's not that big of a deal. But for like my son, who like you know pored over it for days and days and days, and like took pictures of characters and like had it out while he was playing, it's like it's really cool. Like that's one thing I didn't realize. You know, in this day and age, everything's going like e-manual because I think game, you know, people who make games don't think that people read manuals anymore. But I think you know the younger set. They do like it's an extension of the game to them. So they look at the manual and they can see the pictures. And then when they're not playing the game, they can be like, they can kind of feel like they're in that world. And I kind of think it's important to keep that instead of putting little sheets of paper and nobody reads e-manuals. So
that's true.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to just cut in here just for a quick break. So as a lot of you guys out there know, we actually have a contest going on just throughout the whole show, and we're going to go ahead and give out a code word now that you're going to want to send to contest@nintendoworldreport.com, and this is for Nintendo Club Nintendo Prize Pack 3, and inside the prize pack, we have a Club Nintendo Pikmin tote bag, Fishing Master for the Wii, a small tektite meteorite rock specimen and a choice of a t-shirt. So what you're going to want to do is go ahead and send the word boss to contest@nintendoworldreport.com. The word boss is because my coffee is from Suntory
Boss
sitting right here in front of my face. Tommy Lee Jones might be at my house.
That's right, he's
yes. And also I'll give a quick update on the donations. Right now it looks like we're sitting at $5,256. That's freaking awesome. When I went to bed last night, I think we're at like 2,500, and I think I started listening to the show and you know, I fell asleep somewhere around like 2:30 or 3 o'clock. And and I was thinking and excuse me, hoping like, oh man, I'm hoping we get to our you know, segment, and you know, we did.
Right.
Easily. So that's great. So keep on giving if you guys can, any way you can. If anything, too, just, you know, comment in the forums and just participate that way. We love that type of stuff. So anyways, I think, So I think we'll kind of move on a little bit. I'll kind of blow through some of this other Nintendo Direct news. So last year, you know, there was an Attack on Titan game that came out on the 3DS. Actually, I reviewed it for the site. And this new version that's coming out, about a year after the initial release, it's more or less the same game, but Spike Chunsoft decided to add some online play with it this time. Because last time, if you wanted to play with other people, you know, you can only do that locally, or I think maybe with like computer-controlled characters. I really don't remember.
Reminds me of Fantasy Life. Didn't they do this with Fantasy Life? Like they did second version with like online or something.
There was Fantasy Life Link was the one with online.
Yep.
Yeah, and you know, Western folk should be happy, because if this Attack on Titan game does come out in the West, it's probably going to be this, you know, new updated version, right?
Right. So, and you know, I mean, when I played this game, it was actually a lot of fun. I mean, there were a couple of problems. I think you get to be, for those of you familiar with Attack on Titan, you get to be big, like giant type of dudes and stuff. And when you're actually playing as them in the game, it's pretty goddamn broken, because you can just keep pounding people into the ground and just like not let them get up. And then the camera is just a mess in that mode too. But I mean, other than that, it was a lot of fun. You really kind of get the feeling of the anime like in this game. So that's good job on Spike Chunsoft to make something that isn't crap. Mm.
It's just like my animes. Yeah, I've always been really curious about that game, because I've watched a little bit of the series and read the manga a little bit too. But like the graphics were always such a turnoff for me, because it was so like teetering. I mean, I wouldn't say N64 level, but you know,
I would say N64.
But now that they have online play, I am a little curious. Just, I mean, I would like to play a game like that on a bigger console. But yeah, anyways. So you're saying it was good?
Yeah. From what I played and what I remember from last year, I actually had a lot of fun with it. I mean, the controls, especially for the what they call the 3D maneuver gear, it felt great. And I mean, you can zip all over everything. It's amazing. So, and yeah, with this new one, because you can actually buy the whole game, you know, outright for I think something probably like 5,000 or 6,000 yen, or if you own the version from last year, you can just buy an update kit for like 2,000 yen. I think it's basically the Fantasy Life, right? They did that type of exact thing, like you just said earlier. So, I don't know if you guys are familiar about this series at all, Lost Heroes. There was a game that came out on 3DS back in 2012. It's kind of like this thing where there's like Ultraman, Kamen Rider, and Gundam characters. And it's,
take it away, JJ.
Totally Trinity. Well, Trinity isn't in the Gundam just yet, but this game is basically the game where you can watch all your favorite characters be crucified. That's after the tagline.
There it is.
Jesus Christ.
Buy it now.
If you watch the trailer, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's weird, but it's a thing with Ultraman. It's not actually tied to Christianity at all, but they, like, for some reason, they get crucified a lot in that show.
You mean literally crucified on a cross?
More or less.
Okay, I'll take your word for that. I mean, you know, we're in Japan. I'll just roll with it.
Yeah.
No, but it's like a dungeon RPG along the lines of Etrian Odyssey and stuff like that, featuring characters from Superhero Sunday and you know, basically the most popular children's brands in Japan. And from what I hear, it's pretty cool, but like you definitely have to be into those series to appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, moving swiftly on.
Yeah. Next up, you know, Kirby and the Rainbow Curse actually got a solid release date here. I think in the West, it's just like February or something like that, but it's actually going to be coming out on January 22nd here for 3,700 yen, which is about like 1,000 to 2,000 yen cheaper than most normal like home console games, which is pretty cool.
And that looks good.
Yeah, I think it looks amazing, and I think the name, the Japanese title is even more amazing.
Come on, we have to say. Who's going to say it?
I'll do it. Touch Kirby Super Rainbow. Official Japanese title. So
that's amazing. Great.
My dreams have come true.
I can just see the TV commercial now. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
I like this new trend of Nintendo releasing these kind of middle-tier games for cheaper prices. Like this week, we have Captain Toad Treasure Tracker comes out and here in Japan for the same price, 37,000, which is about maybe $35 US. Mm-hmm.
What's that called in Japan? Is it just that the same name?
Same name. I mean, it's a translation of it, but yeah, same thing basically.
Yeah, Kinopio Taicho, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, because I thought, you know, Toad, he's not called Toad here, so. Yeah.
Right. It's Kinopio and Kinopiko for the female version.
great.
Kinopio College.
There are these kind of like off the beaten path style, like, you know, non-AAA games from Nintendo, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I like Nintendo, is that they do these kind of things, and now that they're kind of starting to do that again, and it's not, you know, they're not these smaller like Pushmo style experiences, but something a little bit more meaty, and I really am thankful that they're doing that, and hopefully they do it more in the future. So I'm very excited for this new Kirby and for Kinopiko Treasure Trackers.
That's awesome. I've never heard of Kinopiko before. Makes so much sense. Yeah, but I know what you mean, JJ, because like, it seems like these days we've got, you know, free/freemium games, and then we've got AAA, $60, $70 games, but like not much in between. It seems to only be Nintendo doing that kind of in-betweeny game at the moment.
At least in the market that's not download only.
Right. Yeah. Like disc-based games.
I'm
sure someone's going to prove me wrong and give me a list of games not from Nintendo, but there you go. That's my impression anyway.
I have two apps.
No, but it is. This sort of mid-level thing is really cool. And I think the I saw the Kirby at E3. I didn't play it just because like I'd played the DS one, and it's basically a sequel or of sorts to that. But the Yoshi game I did play, what's it called? Not Epic Yarn, but basically the Yoshi version of the Yarn game. Yes, and that was awesome. And that, like, to me, that's like another example of this kind of game where, like, I don't know if they're going to price it this cheap, but I mean, that game in my mind is probably the best of the sort of like second tier games they showed at E3. It was really fun and actually like challenging, which, you know, because the last couple of Yoshi games have been kind of disappointing, but that felt like it's getting back on track. So I'm pretty stoked about that one too.
Yeah, and the Kirby engine, I guess you could call it, that it's based on. It was
I didn't like that game, but it was really, really pretty.
Yeah. Music was good, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was the music good in that Yoshi game?
I don't remember. It was at E3. Okay. Sprouted, but yeah.
I'm sure it is.
Sure it is.
Speaking of Yoshi soundtracks, the new Yoshi 3DS soundtrack, I think people shat on it a lot. It's pretty good. I think those people are wrong.
You mean the ones that people were calling like the worst Nintendo soundtrack ever made?
Yeah, like there's that one song where it's like beep 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 beep, which is weird and terrible. But I mean, the Japanese Yoshi theme song is like classic Nintendo awesomeness, and it should be appreciated a little bit more.
I had this one song on YouTube. It was just like some voice samples repeated again and again. It was pretty great.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the one I'm talking about. It's at the beginning of the game, and it's like,
oh, okay, that's a Yoshi sound, is it?
You're just going to make me do that over and over again.
Wait, what was that sound again?
Yeah.
Moving on.
Go YouTube it if you want to.
Yeah.
So I guess I would totally buy a wool-based amiibo of Yoshi.
Oh. Yeah.
Take it apart.
If they could do that.
Yeah, hand it on your shelf.
Or you could even wash it.
You could take your Yoshi amiibo and then knit another Yoshi around it. So you could have a Yoshi in your Yoshi while you Yoshi.
And if it gets dirty, you just throw it in the washing machine. It comes out nice and clean.
Yeah. Still works, maybe.
Okay. Next.
The last two little bits of thing from the Nintendo Direct. This is, I'm pretty sure it's the same in the West. You know, Xenoblade Cross, as it's called.
Is it called Cross in Japan? Is that only Japan?
Yeah. I didn't watch the US one, so I don't know the official English name. It's probably X.
I think it's Xenoblade Chronicles X.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But on all the Japanese
in the West, it is. Yeah, in Japan, it's Cross. There's a lot. There's a general Cross theme today, huh? With the crucifixion and Xenoblade.
And there was Ace Combat Cross Scramble Plus, which is cross.
Yeah,
crisscross will make you.
Yeah, and Xenoblade Chronicles X is also like basically like an almost a thing where it's like got the X at the beginning and the end. It's like too many X's.
I wonder if the Shulk amiibo will work with Xenoblade Cross. Dun, dun, dun.
Maybe
that's for like a pretty good idea.
A cool like extra item or something like that.
Yeah. He's not in the game, is he? He's not the main character, is he?
No,
the new one seems to be completely unrelated to the last one as far as what they've shown so far. But it looks awesome. Like it looks like a similar game in the same vein as the first Xenoblade. They've been really light on details as far as story and stuff, but except for what they showed at E3 with they had that like 40-minute direct thing. But I don't know, I think this game looks amazing and I'm super excited about it.
Maybe if you touch the Shulk amiibo while playing Xenoblade Cross, then all your clothes fall off and you're just wearing your underpants.
your beach attire. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that game looks really good. Like Xenoblade was awesome, and hopefully this game is also as awesome. But at the very least, we are getting a Xenoblade with amazing graphics. Right. And I just want to go in that world. I want to get in one of those robots and I want to fly around and basically just do that for 140 hours.
Well, it's going to be a while until there's like a new gen, RPG on the market, right? So this could have, free reign for a while, because this has been in development for, a few years, and God knows when Final Fantasy is going to come out, so.
True. Right.
If it comes out.
So I guess moving along, like I said, we'll go ahead and wrap this up. Splatoon's also coming out here in 2015.
Yay.
So. Yeah, so that's cool. I think it looks like a lot of fun.
Single player mode confirmed.
Yeah. So it was interesting to see that. Go ahead.
Is it called Splatoon in Japan?
Yes.
Splatoon.
Splatoon? Chu or two?
Splatoon, because there's no two. Right. Well, I mean, there is a tune, but two.
Yeah. That's why I asked.
Right. All right. I need to give one more shout out here for the winner of the last segment, the Quick Man prize pack. It's Sunny. Congratulations on winning that.
Good job, Sunny. So,
you are Sunny.
Mm-hmm. A winner is you.
Exactly. Yes. So also I want to give a bit of a plug for something we're going to be doing later in the show. Ty, are you still alive?
Yes.
So we have a game that Ty made up called Fake or Real. And Ty, actually, you wanted to just talk about it really quick, like what it is.
Sure. I have descriptions of bizarre Japanese games, and you have to guess if they're fake or real. That's the entire game.
So simple?
It's really simple. Yeah, it's really simple.
And, I think later on, if possible, if any of you guys out there have some kind of an idea for a fake game or a real game that's just crazy from Japan, try to get lined up to give us a call. That would be great. We're going to try to take – I think we have somebody lined up for a call, which we'll try to get to here in a little bit. But, hit up – I think just hit up Carl Castaneda on the chat on Skype or to maybe say something in the general chat on the page. Or I'm sorry, actually, no, you hit up Don Koopman on Skype. His name is Don Live, D-A-A-N, Live. So yeah, hit him up. But I guess next I would like to move into, I guess, one of our kind of feature discussions for this episode. Maybe a lot of people in the West don't really know this, but, you know, the 3DS Virtual Console in Japan, it's been something that has been out of commission more or less since early May. And, you know, there's still Virtual Console stuff rolling out on Wii U here. I mean, tons of stuff, sometimes like 3 or 4 games a week. But yeah, the 3DS Virtual Console just died.
The Wii U Virtual Console kind of picked up basically right around that week, actually. So it almost seems like they kind of moved all their resources off of 3DS and onto Wii U.
Yeah.
Poor guy working on the VC. He's overworked.
It's a bummer, but, you know, I think that there's still probably more to it than meets the eye. You know, I mean, with the new 3DS having just been announced, I was actually kind of expecting them to talk about it on the Nintendo Direct, like to hopefully say that they're, you know, they've got, like, I don't know, say Super Nintendo games lined up for 3DS Virtual Console. You know, even if you can only play them on the new 3DS, which, granted, that's going to upset some people, but, you know, at least that would be something. But as far as I could tell, they didn't talk about it even on the Japanese Direct. So
yeah, for me, I was in the same boat as you, John, where I was just thinking, like, well, holy crap, this is the last shot to hear about some kind of new, you know, resurgence for 3DS Virtual Console here, and yeah, absolutely nothing. So
It's sensitive, you know, because if you go and announce that sort of thing now, the new 3DS isn't even out in the West yet, and this was a worldwide direct. So it would make sense if, you know, maybe early next year, once the Christmas rush is behind, once they've sold through all their, like, holiday machines and everything, and it's okay to start talking about the next one, assuming it's coming in the spring. I actually have no idea. They haven't even announced it yet. But, you know, if the new 3DS is on the way, hopefully, yeah, that'll be something we hear about, because it's weird to have suddenly just, like, stopped releasing Virtual Console games altogether for months.
Right.
Yeah, my thinking is that eventually, because they've talked about having their systems have one, like, you know, ecosystem, like how iOS is the same on iPad and iPhone.
Right.
I think eventually, like, the licenses that you hold for these games will work on both systems. And instead of having, man, like, your 3DS releases and your Wii U releases, it's just going to be releases.
That's a really good point.
That's probably what we're seeing.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah, it's kind of wishful thinking, I know, but I think it does make sense, actually, because if they were to, they did say that's on the way, and if they were to introduce a system whereby, and they really need to do this, by the way, where you can log into different systems with the same account, then, you know, you would want to have that sort of infrastructure in place to begin with. So hopefully, yeah, they're taking a little bit of a quiet time right now to get everything ready. Again, I know, like, you can listen to that thing, what we just talked about, and be like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you can also listen to it and be like, that just sounds like fanboy dreams. You know, you can't really tell with Nintendo. You never know what they're going to do, but hopefully they're going to do that.
No, John, it does make complete sense. That's why it's never going to happen.
Well, we'll see. Let's hope.
Just Nintendo.
In Iwata's name, I pray.
Please understand.
I'm currently understanding.
Yeah, we've been understanding for a freaking long time now. Wow. You know, I think it could happen with the next system. I mean, you know, they've got that new research, you know, headquarters in Kyoto, where they're working on the next, I don't know what you call it, OS or whatever it is, the thing that ties the two systems together. I can't really see that being implemented fully with the, you know, the Wii U and the 3DS, but definitely the next system is going to be, you know, integrated, you know, as one. Whatever that is.
We shall see.
Yeah. We might see a hint of it at the, you know, the end of the Wii U's life, you know, as a kind of a teaser for the next system or whatever.
Could be an E3 announcement. Who knows?
Yeah. Kind of like the DSi was a teaser to the 3DS, you know, with the shop that they had, you know, and then they did it properly on the 3DS. Kind of like that.
Yeah, it still makes sense to me that the future of Nintendo is sort of like a platform, not so much in the sense of it being hardware. I mean, I'm sure it will be hardware-based, but it's more just like sort of the OS, you know what I mean, that potentially could be run on a variety of different things. I mean, it sounds, that also sounds kind of like crazy talk, but sooner or later, that's probably what everybody's going to be. So it'd be nice if, you know, they're getting that infrastructure in place. But the real, really, the thing that bugs me the most is that I have two 3DSs and I can't log in. Like, I have a XL and I mean, I don't have, but I want to have an XL and a regular one for like different occasions. And I can't actually do that because you can't log into both with the same account, which is really lame.
Oh, that is lame.
Super lame.
But we can hope.
Yeah. We can.
hello?
That's the building.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I'm still here. We're trying to get a caller on, maybe with a question, but maybe we left him waiting too long. I don't know.
He just gave up. Like, guys.
Yeah, he just gave up. He's done. So, okay.
Cool. So do we have anything else to add about the 3DS Virtual Console in Japan?
Well,
that's about it, right? I mean,
well, since I'm sure Reggie is listening right now, I would just like to make one more request, which is they really need to have customizable buttons. Is that still not a thing? Because on Wii U, you can actually, you know, change the button config on your Virtual Console games, which is a big deal because a lot of times the default B and A setup is weird. But you still can't do that on 3DS. So, Reggie, as a big fan of this podcast, I'm just making this request to you now, live.
Yeah. And, kind of back with, like, you know, the new 3DS thing and, you know, what I really honestly thought that, you know, they'd announce something sooner rather than later. But, you know, whatever, that doesn't matter. But, you know, maybe since, you know, M2 is doing a lot of, like, those GBA ports on the Wii U and they're incredible. You know, with the cool digital manuals and all that type of stuff. And
yeah, I don't know. M2 is best.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are just, they really take this stuff seriously and they just put a lot of love and care into this stuff. And yeah, I'm just kind of hoping for that with the 3D Virtual Console too, because I mean, yeah, there's a shit ton of games. Like, I think in my notes, what do I have? 245 games in the 3DS Virtual Console. I mean, that's a lot of goddamn games in just, like, you know, a couple of years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and right.
So how do you guys feel about, I mean, I'm pretty much a purist when it comes to, like, having handheld games on a handheld and console games on a console. You know, like John said, he wanted, you know, SNES games on the 3DS. You know, I would be up for that if, you know, like, they worked on both. But what is surely going to happen is that, you know, it's only going to be on the 3DS, or it's only going to be on the Wii U, and you have to buy them twice. You know, like what happened with, you know, Mario Brothers 3. You know, they released it on the Wii U and the 3DS on the same day, and you have to buy them separately. I mean, it's just ridiculous, you know.
Well, that's another reason why they should, you know, if they are, because they're doing the opposite now, right? They're putting all these Game Boy Advance games on Wii U, which,
right, that's what I mean. Yes,
I'm just kind of like you. I'm kind of the opposite. Like, I'll play anything on a handheld. I don't care if it's console or handheld. But on the Wii U, I kind of don't want to play GBA games. It feels like, maybe because my TV is big and, like, I usually play on the actual TV and not on the Wii U gamepad, but it's like, I mean, I'm not complaining, it's nice to have, but I would much rather have those games on 3DS. And it does make sense, again, this kind of sounds crazy because they never do what you expect them to do, but it would make sense for them to have all those GBA games also be able to work on 3DS. And like, if you already bought them, be able to just play them on there when they eventually introduce this stuff for new 3DS. But we'll see.
Exactly. That's another thing that I was thinking of, you know, the GBA on Wii U fiasco. I mean, you've got GBA games on the 3DS if you're an ambassador, but you can't play the other GBA games that have just come out on the Wii U. It's just like, just annoys me so much.
I think another kind of ball that was dropped with the Virtual Console too is that there's no achievements of any kind. Like, this is just like the if there's ever a place in the world to have achievements above all other places, it's here. You have all these classic games that everyone has played that, like, people would love to go back to if they had a reason besides just nostalgia. And, like, if you introduced some sort of achievement system,
yes,
I would play games like 10 times more than I play them now, because it
now
would just,
you're talking my language.
Yeah, right? John, it's called Famicom Remix. Please buy it again.
Yeah.
Please understand.
Yeah. All right. Actually, looks like we have our first caller of the day. Daniel, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, man, what's up?
Hi, Daniel.
You doing great? How about yourselves?
Oh, I'm okay. It's the
super
morning.
Good.
I'm great. Confused because there's two Daniels on the call now. So my head just exploded.
Well, remember, I'm Danny Biv. Whatever. So do you have a question for us here today, Daniel?
Yeah, my question has really nothing to do with Japanese games, but I have another question. But my main question is, I called a couple years back on Famicast, and I'm going to ask the same question, but what are games that you hate but everybody loves? And that's kind of my question, because, you know, my games that I hate, there are two big games where one is I do not like Super Mario 64. I think that game is kind of garbage in a lot of ways.
Cut his mic.
And then my other hating is that I dislike every single Zelda game before Ocarina of Time. I just can never get into any of them.
Oh my god.
Oh, I'm with you on that one, actually.
What?
So whoever's in charge of the call, can you just cut Ty and Daniel, please? Thanks.
Heathens, the unwashed masses.
Okay. So Daniel, I thought you originally said the game that we like that everyone hates, but which one are we asking here? the game that we hate. Okay, I got it. Well, I think I can go first. I've got a good one. Mega Man. I've tried to play Mega Man many, many times, and I just don't get it. it's just not fun for me. So that's mine, I guess.
Did you grow up on it? Did you play it?
No, I didn't grow up on it. I tried to get in.
That's a big part of it. Because if you had come on to like recently with like Mega Man 9 or 10 or whatever, and that was like, you know, where you started with the series, I would understand. Yeah. Because those games are not beginner friendly at all.
I mean, the music is awesome, and I do like the look of it, but it's just, you know, gameplay wise, you know, I've just played better, you know, kind of runner shooter games, you know, platform games. So yeah, but you know, I appreciate, you know, the value of the game in the history of video games, but it's just not for me.
Okay. Let's see, games I don't like, as our caller and my new best friend said, I don't like Zelda games released after like 1995.
After 1995?
Yeah.
So 3D Zeldas, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, okay.
Well, we can't be best friends now. I love 3D Zelda games.
Yeah, opposite.
We're opposites. Okay.
And I became your nemesis.
Yeah, my rival. Okay, but
is that including Ocarina of Time, or?
I didn't really like Ocarina of Time.
So what about the kind of semi-3D ones, like the 3DS one and the DS ones and stuff like that?
I haven't even played those. Okay. But, okay, I want to talk about MOBA games. Like, you know, I play a lot of competitive games, but I have not gotten into those, and I don't really see the appeal. But apparently, if you want to like make money playing games, you have to play those.
Well, they're kind of hot right now.
Say what?
They're kind of hot right now.
Yeah, but you know,
I think that was a better answer than Zelda.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine you guys would probably agree.
The thing is with MOBAs, and I'm actually a fan of MOBAs. MOBAs are games that are completely alien to a lot of people and require a lot of time to understand. Like, and I'm not talking like, oh yeah, you can play for a couple of weekends and figure it all out. You need to be playing. Like, you really need to know the mechanics and stuff. Basically, I mean, I didn't need to quit my job to understand, but it was a lot of late nights, and not a lot of people are ready to put in the time for something like that, which is totally understandable, because a lot of games play today are
fighting game player. So
sure.
Like
but fighting games...
Time and effort are not alien to me.
Right. fighting games are pretty... I mean, when you play a fighting game, it's pretty immediate. You know what's going on. You kick, punch, you fight the other guy until they die. In Dota or in other MOBAs, it's not as simple as that. It's not as immediate as that. When you join in a game of Dota, you're like, what the fuck am I doing? And you'll like run into a turret and you'll be like, why am I dying? And then like, why are they so strong? What is going on?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I've played MOBA games before. Like,
yes.
I used to play Footman Frenzy on Warcraft 3. Do you know what that is?
No, I do not.
Okay, it was kind of like a MOBA-ish like custom map slash mod that's basically the same thing, and you have a base that continually produces, you know, footmen, or you can upgrade them to a different unit, and you basically just control your hero, and you try to cause a bunch of trouble so you win.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe the thing is that you lean on a team, and that seems really uncomfortable to me.
Because, go ahead, John.
As I say, I find the concept of MOBAs really interesting, and like, you know, as someone who like traditionally has never been a fan of like games with like overly Western art, you know, it wasn't like something that immediately appealed to me, but I've come around to them in a sense that like I would really like to get into one, except I don't think I'm ever going to be able to get into games that don't have controllers. Like I know that a lot of people love playing games with their keyboard and their mouse, but that is just not something I can get into, and I think that's the barrier for me. If there were one that was console friendly but maintain the depth, you know, of games like, you know, I don't know, Dota or League of Legends or whatever, I would totally be down to try it. But right now, that's kind of keeping me away.
You can add me onto the list of hating MOBAs, by the way. Just keep this going.
All right.
Okay.
If there was a Nintendo MOBA, you'd all be coming around. my game, and I think I've said this on several different occasions, but the original Tomb Raider. Was pretty heavily lauded as like a really amazing game, but it like literally put me to sleep. I like actually fell asleep playing that game. And to me, it was just like one of the most boring experiences of all time.
I'm with you on that one.
I take that as a personal hit against the British Empire.
Oh, I know, right?
Incredibly offended.
War. Yeah.
Lara Croft, the Queen of England.
Yeah. Deputy Queen.
Yes.
If the real queen dies, then she goes into power.
Right.
So, Danny, have you gone?
I haven't, but I'm just going to say we're running a little bit short on time, okay. So I'll go ahead and dismiss you really quickly. Actually, James, I think I'm almost the same as you, man, with Mega Man. I have a really, really high respect for the game, but it's something I didn't grow up with, so I don't know. I'm not good at it, so you know what? Get good, right? But I don't know. I mean, I just don't enjoy playing them, probably because I suck at them. But yeah, I guess in terms of like games that I like that everybody hates, maybe Obi-Wan on Xbox, the original Xbox.
Nobody likes that game. You mean you like that?
I like that game.
Oh yeah, that's the opposite. Okay.
Yeah, the opposite.
Come on, find a Zelda game to hate. Jeez.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I guess we have to say thank you and goodbye to Daniel. I hope that answer was okay, dude.
Thanks, Dan.
It's great. All the questions, answers were great.
Okay. Thanks, man. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for calling in, buddy.
All right. See you, guys.
See you, man.
Bye.
All right. So with our last 15 minutes, I thought we can go ahead and tackle Fake or Real. So
yes.
Do you want to go ahead and just take it away?
Hit that jingle. Oh, we don't have a jingle.
Boom.
Yeah. Sure thing. Okay.
Fake or real. Are they fake or are they real?
Okay. I like it.
You're welcome. Definitely
going to save that for next month.
Yes. And we appreciate that you can do that not only on your own podcast, but on ours. That's much appreciated, JJ.
this is why you have me on.
All right.
Professional jingler.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to be keeping an eye on the chat, too, because I think things are going to get interesting. Okay, so once again, fake or real, I wrote the descriptions of three games. I determined whether to write descriptions of real games or fake games by coin flip. So it's totally random. There is no pattern. There is no rhyme or reason. So,
well, with only three games, there's definitely a probability that either two will be fake or two will be real.
Yeah, you're good at statistics.
I'm good at that.
You're smart.
I don't know if these other guys have figured it out, but all right. So three games. Let's see. Okay. Let's start with the first game. Is this game fake or real? This is a top-down action game where you fight your way through feudal Japan as Lord Baka, or a weird flamboyant French guy.
Isn't that one of the Onimushas? No, I guess that was
Lord Baka as in Baka Dono?
Yeah, maybe.
Shimura Ken? Maybe. I'm gonna say that's real.
Giant mechanical crab based on real Japanese history.
Right, well, there you have it. JJ says it's real.
We're all going to guess, right? So I'm going to say that's probably real, too.
I'm just going to say fake just because. Fake. I'm fake.
Yeah.
All right. Two reals, two fakes.
Let's see. Okay. So I'm not keeping score this time, by the way. Oh, okay. Too many people. I can't handle it. So, yes, this game is real.
Woo.
It's D.A. Tonosama Apare Ichiban. I saw pretty good. Yeah, it's a Super Nintendo game. Plays like Pocky and Rocky. And it's very silly. So please check it out sometime.
All right. What was that game name again?
D.A. Tonosama Apare Ichiban.
Obviously.
Yeah, right? Come on.
Duh.
Duh. Yeah. Do you want me to write it down?
There it is. I'm looking at it on YouTube now.
Yeah. I'll probably tweet it up in a little bit as the rest of the
Sunsoft.
I saw their booth at TGS. I don't think they had any games.
Was that the one with the pro wrestlers? No, that was four games.
What did they have going on? We couldn't even tell.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to the next game. Okay. This is a game where you play as a TV mascot that looks like a weird egg or duck thing. You collect mouths. You can use your own mouth as a boomerang or to scale walls.
A TV mascot where you throw your mouth as a boomerang.
After that's the first game, anything's going to sound real. Cause like,
right. I'm trying to like filter through my knowledge of Japanese TV and see if there was anything like that. I don't remember anything like that.
Well,
so I'm going
to say. There's that crummy. Does this have to be a Japanese game?
Yeah, all of these are Japanese.
Oh, okay. Because there's that crummy egg guy that everybody likes in Europe, right? What's his name? Dizzy.
Dr. Robotnik.
Dizzy. Oh, right,
yeah.
Dizzy, what a shitty game. I mean, a terrible game.
Another hit against the British Empire.
I could have gotten it, Dizzy.
Those games were illegal. You were encroaching on.
I'm seeing a lot of fake in the chat.
Yeah, I would say fake.
I think I would say real, just because I want to be wrong on all of these.
Yeah.
I'll
go ahead and I'll go fake.
I'm going to say real.
Okay. Ooh.
Okay, well, guess what? It's real.
Hey, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's called Hachiemon.
Hachiemon.
It's a Game Boy Advance game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's like Kansai TV mascot.
Oh, well, that's why I wouldn't know. Awesome. It's fucking Kansai.
Get wrecked.
Yeah.
I like JJ's cool. Become a full-on Kanto guy, you know. It's like,
yeah, well, man, I live here, Saitama. I'm not even Tokyo, I'm Saitama.
Hey, right. I'm Saitama, too. Saitama represent!
Hey, I'm almost Saitama. I'm posting a URL in chat so people can learn more about Hachiemon.
Right. John, are you Tokyo?
I'm Tokyo, yeah.
I'm Chiba, so yeah, I guess Saitama wins in this podcast.
Right.
All right. Are you keeping track of your own scores? Please.
I'm two for two. Woo!
Yeah.
I'm two for two.
I'm one for two.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
So the last game. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. All right. This is a game based on an anime based on an American children's book. You are a raccoon who stacks jars.
It sounds so stupid, but at the same time, I can imagine it.
No Googling.
You got me. No, I think that was me. I'm cheating. No, you know, that seems like the least outrageous one. But I'm going to say real. I'm going to go say real.
I know what it is.
You do?
I think I do. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm. That sounds like it's something that can be real. So I'll go ahead and say real on this one, too.
I'll just say it's fake just because I said real for the other two.
The thing is, it's certainly not wacky enough, right? The other one had like a mouth throwing egg, and this one's just like
scars. Well, what was that game where you had to like sort luggage? Was it like
Aero Porter?
Yeah. I mean, stacking jars, you know, stacking suitcases. I mean, it's not that outrageous, but I don't know.
All right, well, let's say real.
All right, and what say the rest of you?
What did I say? I think I said that.
Danny can't even keep track of his own answers. Never mind.
I don't even know what's happening now.
I'm guessing okay. It's real.
All right, everybody ready?
Yeah.
All right. This game is real.
Hey. Is this Rascal?
Yeah, it is.
I knew it. It's so funny because just yesterday I was looking up info on. So this Rascal the Raccoon is like this old NHK mascot, I guess, in Japan. And I was.
Because he's in Monster Strike commercials, right?
Exactly. Yes, he was in the because Monster Strike is a game that I'm playing like nonstop lately. And I was like, who is this character? Like, because he was a promo character, and I'd never seen him before. And I was like, he's not from another video game. He's not from anything I know. And I looked it up, and he's from the '60s, and he's like apparently was their mascot or something.
Yeah, I'm about to blow you guys' minds. Okay, so yeah, he came from an American 1963 children's book. And then, like, he became an animated show in Japan. And the theme song to this show became, like, the main level music for Frogger.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Like, they stole it, or?
Well, I think they did legally, but, yeah, basically.
That's kind of crazy.
I've got a similar story. Like, do you remember, like, was it RoboCop on the NES? The theme song
from that?
Got put into a British detergent commercial or something.
Yeah.
It was so weird.
The music from the Game Boy game.
Yeah.
And I bought that game just because of that.
Like, because of the British detergent commercial?
It's like, wow, this game has good music. I'm going to buy it.
Awesome. So in the last few minutes, we got to talk about the massive thing that we skipped over from the Nintendo Direct, which is Majora's Mask 3D.
You can thank me for not putting that in there.
Yeah, thanks, John, for reminding us about that. So yeah, I'm hashtag get hype. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I am super, super excited. That is one of my favorite Zelda games by far. And I was hoping they were going to do this. So very
excited for you guys.
This will be my this will actually be my first chance to play Majora's Mask on a console that I own, so I'm very excited,
and hopefully the frame rate will be a lot better, because that was pushing the N64 to its max at the time with the expansion pack and all that shiz.
Right. Did it look upgraded? Did the graphics look better than what you remember?
Well, just the same as Ocarina to Ocarina 3D, you know, the same kind of jump.
Which was a nice jump.
Right. It's kind of weird. Like, I watched the thing blown up on my TV. So, I mean, you know, it's not going to look as good. I need to just probably try to watch, like, the little trailer, like, on my 3DS to see kind of how that would look. But, yeah, it seems like James has said, it's kind of like the same type of thing with Ocarina of Time 3D. I mean, it looks fine. So
Al Newman talked about it today on the Miiverse. He posted a thing on the Miiverse just, you know, telling people a little bit about it. And he basically was saying that, like, it's been in the works for a while now, like 3 years, but they didn't want to announce it until they felt like it was a significant, you know, step up from the original. He's basically teasing that there's going to be new content of some sort, which is exciting. That was a great game that had really good atmosphere. I would say some of the best dungeons in any Zelda game ever. Funny story too, JJ, I don't know if you were with me this time, but like about, I kind of had a hunch that this game was coming for a while now. I mean, not like it was super hard to guess after Ocarina, the developer of Ocarina of Time is actually like 5 minutes from our office in Shibuya. Ooh, and one day we were going home from work, and I bumped into Al Numa at the station, and I was just like, what are you doing here? Because like, he doesn't live in Kyoto.
Yeah, I was there.
And, like,
I was there.
Right? Remember that? And like ever since then, I've been like, okay, put two and two together. Because this was after Ocarina had come out. I was like, okay, maybe they're doing another one.
John, have you said that? Have you said that story on your own podcast? Or is this a world exclusive?
It's world exclusive. Yeah, I don't know. We probably
world
talked
exclusive.
About it. I mean, it was quite a shock. To bump into him in such a random place. We're friend, you know, we've known him, we're friends with the guy, but I mean, to actually like just like, you know, that's a big station too. That's not just like, I mean, he happened to be walking down the stairs as we were walking up. Like, it's super random to run into a guy like that in a place like that, but
that's awesome.
Now we know.
There you go. That's what you get when you get Famicast Cross 8-4 play. World exclusive.
Indeed.
Just got to end with a cross there.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for having us on, guys. This was fun.
Yeah. I'm definitely glad you guys can make it. And John, I'm glad that you climbed out of your death bed to join us today.
I'm going right back.
That's awesome.
And JJ, always a pleasure to have you on too, man. It's great.
Indeed.
So, up next with the podcast is the section with shenanigans where anything and everything can go wrong or right. So you guys can definitely get excited for that. I guess
that's right. That's right. That's right, Danny.
There it is. There it is.
Fantastic.
I guess.
Oh, and you can hear it in the Skype call already.
Oh my god!
So we'll go ahead and drop off. So see you guys. Good luck.
Bye.
Peace.
Peace.
Hey everybody!
All right, everybody. What's that, James?
I said, if you haven't had enough of me today, I'm back for hour five.
Hour five. It's not the final hour, really, but, you know.
It's the fifth hour of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about me this year, boys.
Yep. Well, yeah, this is the year of James. Year of the Box Hunter.
Year of the Box.
The Box Hunted.
Shenanigans.
That sounds so boring. I'm sorry.
Year of the Box. Only if you don't know what it means, Guillaume.
All right. Well,
doesn't folks, it mean like a box of freaking shoes?
No, it's a callback.
I'm talking
to,
about shoes. I just adore shoe containment units.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's intro this up, gentlemen. Let's take it down several notches and then put them up five. All right. I'm your host for this segment of Shenanigans, Carl Castaneda. It's good to be with you in an official capacity today, and I am joined by the fabulous boys of Radio Free Nintendo, starting with Johnny Metz.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, buddy. War Eagle, okay. Right?
War Eagle. Don't start. Do not. No. We're not. No.
Isn't Radio Free College Football due for a comeback?
No, not tonight. Of all nights. Absolutely not. Football doesn't exist. I'm closing out the telethon, and then I'm going to go see Interstellar in 70mm tonight.
Ooh,
so fuck football. I do not want to think about it right now.
Let me tell you, that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun times. Well, we've also got the Box Hunter himself, James Jones.
Hi.
Hello.
Wait, do you want me to roll out with some fire? I'm saving.
Yeah, I need that fire from Jump Street,
fire,
James.
Carl.
Dude, this is Shenanigans. This is where we let the flame free, man.
I gotta recharge. I've been burning hot all day.
If you're burning hot, then burn hot, dog. All right, look. We've also got Guillaume Vaillette here from Icy Montreal.
Yes.
Is it actually icy there yet? It's very cold here in Chicago, so I just assume it's colder there.
No, it's not icy. It's just crummy.
Oh, lovely.
Crummy.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Is Don on the call? It looks on Skype like he's on the call.
I think he's muted. I think he's just here for support.
Oh.
But we've also got silky smooth John Lindemann.
Oh, hey, just, you know, I was in this party next door and I just wandered in here, guys. It's good to be here. Yeah.
You know, whenever I talk to John, I always like to slip in a sly reference to the Sharks, but even I have limits when it comes to torture.
So do I. Coincidentally, that's why I really don't follow them anymore.
All right, go Sharks! Make those playoffs. Make the yachts. Man.
They're probably already gone. If there's a playoff going on somewhere, they've already been eliminated in the first round.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Mm-hmm. If there's a playoff going on, they got in to get the fuck out.
Yep, they got the best record in the league, and they got out first round. You know,
John and I get commiserate on this one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So this is Shenanigans, and just so people listening understand what's going on, we don't. No wonder Carl knows what's happening right now, and I think Carl has at best a vague plan for what's going to happen here. But this is complete. We're just walking in blind to this.
All I'm saying is you're about to follow me into the darkness without your safety goggles. All right.
Okay.
Without your safety goggles. How do safety goggles keep you safe from dark?
Exactly.
I'm not really worried about my eyes. I'm worried about my kidney.
Mm-hmm. Worried about my ears. By the way, we should give maybe a quick donation update. We're up over $5,500, which is astounding. Thank you, everybody who's been donating. There's still time left, by the way, because we do have enough to unlock Box Office Poison Live, which is coming up right after this, where we're talking about the stupid Wing Commander movie. But since the rest of the stretch goals, like To Catch a Prehistoric Predator and Connectivity Live and RFN Live, those aren't happening until a later date anyway, and we are leaving donations open for the next week. We could potentially hit those stretch goals after we finish tonight. If we have stragglers, other people who hear about this and they want to donate later, I think that's still a possibility. There is definitely still an opportunity there, but I don't want to take anything away from the amazing donations that have been happening today and all the great interaction and all the people who've been working behind the scenes, most notably Carl, who finally gets a chance to shine here. So I'll turn it back to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Johnny. It's been an all-day effort, folks. I kind of take on the role of executive producer when it comes to the telethon.
You do stuff. You take on the role of producer.
No, I mean, that's why I said executive producer, because I do things, but I also have people who do things for me.
Oh, okay.
It's called workings, being the boss.
Workings within workings, James. Mm-hmm. We have some awesome stuff planned for our stretch goals if we can make it there. I mean, as Johnny said, we've got To Catch a Predator in $450. We've got a Connectivity Live segment if we hit $7,000. And then the RFN segment when you hit $8,000. I mean, look, the telethon is going to be up and available to be donated to up until November 15th. So you actually have a full week. I know some people get their paychecks, every 2 weeks. Maybe you can do it this time. Totally understandable. Any donation is so, so welcome. I mean, literally every dollar gets us closer. And even if we don't hit one of our milestones, just having the extra dollar goes to a great cause. There is literally not a dime wasted.
Yep.
But
hey, by the way, Carl, we should give a code word for the final. I think this will be the final giveaway, right?
So the code word for this hour is Red Velvet.
Oh. God damn it. God damn it, Carl.
Yeah. If you must. So
no, he mustn't. That's the problem.
So if you're listening and you want to enter for the giveaway, and if you haven't won one of the hourly giveaways earlier in the day, then you're still eligible. So please enter again. And just all you have to do is send an email to contest@nintendoworldreport.com with the code word Red Velvet. And if you're a live listener, then you have a chance, probably a good chance. If you're still sticking it out through this, this is our ninth hour of podcasting today.
Well, 8 to 9. Yeah, you're right.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's the
9th. Yeah, I mean, TYP says that Red Velvet is not one word. It's hyphenated, okay?
Oh, good Lord. It doesn't matter.
In any case.
It really doesn't matter. It's look, gross hateful. Is what it is.
It's really, it's the spirit of it that's important.
Yeah. Jesus, John, it's not.
Someone just said in the chat that they can't even eat Red Velvet anymore, like if it's like a cupcake or a cake.
Oh, I'm not letting that discourage me from eating Red Velvet cake. Fuck you. I'm not letting that get in the way of my tasty dessert.
I think you should be discouraged by the fact that Red Velvet cake tastes bad.
No, it's awesome.
Red Velvet cake is amazing.
I'm a big fan of cheesy desserts, so.
Fromage, if you will, Guillaume.
We actually have some content to hit, fellas. If you
sure,
whatever you say, Carl.
In the tank, buddy.
All right. Now, the first thing we have to do is actually, it was a forum post here. I'm going to go ahead and
wait,
find it.
What?
Here. Now, this is a forum post from Ready Let's Go at our own forum at NintendoWorldReport.com. And they said, I'm hoping you guys will be doing the Wii U and 3DS report card again and maybe some words on the Next Gen Twins. Now, we did not get to that this year.
Can we do the Wii and DS report card right now? Twins. F for both. Nothing's coming out this year I want to play.
Done. Now, I don't need some long-winded, weighty explanation. I don't need what you guys did in segment two, all right? Maybe just a general feel of how you would grade the consoles going. And to give you guys a little bit of lead time, I'll go first. You know, I honestly, like, I've had a Wii U now for, I guess, a little over a year. So this is definitely, I've had it long enough to sort of see its pros and cons. And I actually think it had a pretty decent 2014. Like, it hasn't necessarily been a banner year by any respect, and there's definitely been pockets of dead air in there. But honestly, if I had to go right now, if I had to buy one next-gen console, and I can only have the games that are currently out on it and games that are currently coming out in the next, like, 2-3 months, I think I'd pick a Wii U.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
If you mash together the first 2 years of it and treat it like it was just 1 year, then it looks like a really good year.
Wow, that's strong. If you take the entire lineup of the Wii and compact it down to 2010,
and act like it was released all in a 6 month span, it's amazing.
Well, and I'm not joking. I mean, I think that's how a lot of people are looking at it, because you know, people are it's competing now with the PS4 and the Xbox One, and those have been out for 1 year less, but nobody really bought a Wii U the first year, only us crazy people. Mm-hmm. And there really weren't very many games released for it. So if you just kind of pretend that year didn't exist, which is pretty easy for 99% of the people living on the planet Earth, then the Wii U looks very competitive with those other two systems, and it costs less. Not much less, but it costs a little bit less, and it has better games right now.
Want to say, like, if you're just jumping in now, Lego City Undercover is worth getting, and Pikmin 3. Don't forget about Pikmin 3.
There's a demo of Pikmin 3, so you can you can go try that for yourself.
But I mean,
Wii U finally has a couple of games that people that are not us care about.
Also, if you're just jumping in now, don't forget about Super Smash Brothers. I mean, it's a game you might have heard of. Just don't forget.
It's so obscure. Jesus.
Yeah.
No? I don't know. I don't know if I had that appeal.
It's like a crappy version of Mario Party, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's you like mean a version of Mario Party?
A crappy version of Mario Party.
Yeah.
Really, I think, it'll be interesting to see how Wii U does through the rest of the year after Smash Brothers comes out. I think that's kind of what everybody's waiting to see. But, you know, it does feel like in the past 3 or 4 months, the system has really turned around a lot and people are much more positive on it. I think you really have to chalk that up to Mario Kart. I mean, that one game, it's not that it turned the Wii U into an overnight success, but I think it sort of helped reverse course in terms of people's attitudes.
And, yeah, it's a tentpole title, right? I mean,
it's my most played Wii U game by far. I mean, it's not only is it a tentpole in that it's a franchise that people look to as one that represents quality, it's a hit. It was very well reviewed. Maybe not on this site, but
don't open that can of worms.
Open it wide.
The thing is, it
is something that you can't get anywhere else, right?
Yeah,
it's really good. You can't get that anywhere else. I mean, unless it's
the best next gen racing game right now. Like,
I would agree with that.
The one that's better, you know.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. People love Forza, so I'm not ready to make that kind of call. But I've been going back to it.
I mean, Drive Club is really well reviewed.
Drive Club. Still waiting on that PS Plus version, guys. PS Plus version.
It's better than Forza.
It almost sticks the upholstery counter to the grain of leather, just like they do in a real car.
I did not like it. So I tried it on the free demo. I did not like it. I like Gran Turismo 6 a lot better. So
yeah. Hmm.
But yeah, I've been going back this week to Mario Kart, and it's a lot of fun. And there's always people online, of course, like it's still new, but it's great fun.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. It's weird that Mario Kart hit so well, because I mean, I bought Mario Kart 7 when it came out, and that game did not grab me at all. Like,
well, the physics were all screwed up. Like, you would if you got hit by a shell while you were going up a hill, you would be going back down a hill. It was extremely frustrating. I mean, I guess it's just one more thing. It was happening to everyone, so it's just one thing to get used to. But the game did not feel right to me. It didn't feel like it was made by the same people, and it didn't feel like those new people knew exactly what they were doing, to be honest.
Well, it just didn't have that same inherent flavor that, like, Mario Kart DS had. That made, for me, that's still my favorite Mario Kart in the series. just because it's such a tight experience. And I feel like Mario Kart 8 is similarly just very, very tight and well put together. Like there's I feel like there's almost no wasted elements in there, except for maybe Mario Kart TV, but I know that has its fans. You know, and so for me, honestly, it lives at my girlfriend's apartment as the Mario Kart machine, you know, it's, and for a lot of people, that's enough, you know, but I'm looking at it now, obviously we've got Smash Bros. Coming out in like 2 weeks and that's going to like dominate the planet.
You know, I skip most Mario Kart iterations and grab one every so often. And my takeaway on 8 was I could skip this one. So,
I'm sure the things that it did very well will be incorporated into the next one. It's sort of like Pokemon, where you just kind of need to skip every few.
I don't know that you need to play every single Mario Kart because they don't change that much from.
No, but I mean, I might skip like 3 in a row and then
exactly
and go okay.
Well, yeah, that's if you went from 64 or Double Dash to 8, it would seem like a huge step up, and it is
right. Right.
So I can understand that kind of thinking. I mean, again, that's how I treat Pokemon. I only buy it every 3 or 4 years because that's how long it takes for them to actually make a better game.
Yeah, it's like Madden's the same way.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Overall, though, I would say
John, he didn't say he buys 3 or 4 Mario Karts or Pokemon a year. Just to clarify.
Yeah.
Every 3 or 4 years, he buys one.
If only Madden came out on even more platforms, if only.
John Lindemann's body is 70%.
You mean like the Wii U or 3DS?
Well, I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned the 3DS because I think, you know, last year was sort of the year that everyone said, oh, the 3DS came back. Like, it really bounced and was seemingly doing very well. Do you guys think that continued in 2014?
No.
Anyone?
No! 3DS had a cruddy year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just depends on what you like, but for me, this year hasn't been nearly as good. You know, I did not play very much Tomodachi Life. I was kind of hoping that would be more substantial than it really is. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of that is I just didn't know what the hell – like I bought that out of curiosity because I didn't really understand what it was. Mm-hmm. And it's neat. I don't completely regret it, but it's really not something that I spent a lot of time with, and I never will. So, you know, that's kind of a disappointment. And I think they blew their load a little bit last year with 3DS. You know, overall there have been fewer games this year. I think Smash Brothers is a huge highlight, and I've enjoyed that a lot. But before Smash Brothers, it was a long time since I'd bought a full price 3DS game.
I enjoyed a lot of the smaller stuff on 3DS this year, like the 3D classics from Sega, stuff like that was really good.
Pause.
Oh, God.
Which I mentioned games Sega. Are we talking about here? You did. You mentioned a company that cannot make good games, so please tell me.
Well, this is back when they used to make good games, like Space Harrier,
so never?
Galaxy Force, which I believe both those came out this year.
Yeah, I think so.
That sounds right. Yeah.
I kind of wish that we had. Did we have. What are they called? God damn it. Level 5.
Level 5. Yeah.
Yeah, the small games that they released. Did they release a compilation this year?
Guild 3.
The Guild series.
I think Guildo 2 was all last year.
It was. Right. Yeah.
So I kind of feel like I'm missing
Monsters
that.
On one of my things.
That's so
right. Wrong. So I'm just, I kind of miss having something like that. And I miss having, you know, like I was really into Mutant Muds, but this year, like, I don't feel like anything like that came out, or at least nothing that I can recall off the top of my head, you know?
I had a couple games that I really, really enjoyed. Obviously, Leighton versus Wright, I'm just all about, but it was a relatively... You know, light. I mean, not light. Light might not be accurate. There were games this year that came out that were of good quality, and there were quite a few games that came out. They just weren't necessarily games for me. This is a year that felt more like. Well, I mean, it felt like what this year was. It felt like year 3-4 kind of the DS, where you get a whole lot of licensed titles coming out, and they sort of. You know, they make up a big portion of the release list. You get like a game for the Pac-Man cartoon, or you know, Big Hero 6, and those are like you know, just there's a ton of these games. There's a ton of games out there. They just aren't necessarily targeting us. I mean, there were you know bigger games like I mentioned that. There's Theatrhythm. There's Shoot, what else came out this year? I mean, there's Smash Brothers, obviously.
It's just Nintendo. Well, that's the thing. There haven't been a lot of third-party 3DS games, period, but...
Yep.
You know,
this
like,
year there
like
were.
You,
but
if you're comparing
mostly...
this to the DS, I don't think there were that many great.
Well, no, there were
not
a
like
lot
original
of
IPs.
Games.
The way on the DS, you know, in the fourth year of the DS, you were looking at some pretty major RPGs coming out. You still had Castlevania games coming out, stuff like that. And this year on the 3DS, there's really nothing to compare to that. I mean, there's some indie stuff like Shovel Knight that maybe fills in that slot, but you know, the big companies just aren't. They're not really making big 3DS games right now. I think Theatrhythm, which is kind of an expansion of a previous game, is really one that might be the biggest third-party release on 3DS this year, and that's not saying a whole lot. I mean, as good as it might be, it's really not significantly different than the game that was out much, much earlier.
Yeah, well, that's the problem now. It's like if Nintendo is not making these games, then nobody else is, right?
Yeah, yeah. And Nintendo's output is impressive, but they can't bring it all the time. You know, consistent. Yep. They can't be 100% consistent every single year. It's just not possible.
Well, and I don't think this year it was very impressive. I think that's it. I think if you go through the entire release list for this year on 3DS, you'll find that Nintendo actually doesn't show up that much. I mean, you know, or they show up with relatively smaller things like Steel Diver Subwars or Rusty's Wheel of Baseball. I mean, there were games like Bravely Default came out this year.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's a game that is of undeniably high quality that I have issues with.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, there were some games early in the year, there were some games late in the year, but in the middle, it was pretty much just licensed game, licensed game, licensed game, licensed game.
Well, James, I'm gonna take a quick pause right there because we have Nathan on the line, and Nathan, what's going on, man?
You're all right, lads. How you doing?
Oh,
yeah.
What?
Hi, Nathan.
What is this?
Welcome.
What?
God damn it.
Is Nathan your middle name?
No.
Uh-oh.
It's me.
Ahoy, hoy, Greg. How you doing, man?
Nathan.
Oh, fine, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now, Greg, because you were trying to you ironed me in this under this surname to try to get on earlier.
No. I was just setting it up so it didn't seem too naked for shenanigans. That's all.
Oh, wow.
It wouldn't be. It had to actually be some deceit for it to be legitimately shenanigans. So I'm only delivering on the promise of the segment.
Well, consider done, sir. Consider the egg upon my face, sir. Wow.
Poor Carl.
So you didn't know either, Carl? Really?
No. That was just pure podcast magic. That was just all, you know, a part of the magic of the show.
Wonderful.
But
Greg,
it's, you know, it's honestly, it's almost kismet that we're talking about report cards because your very first episode
was always report cards.
Your very first episode of Ready for Nintendo was talking about the first Wii report card.
Forever linked. You were talking about kismet. The fucking Wing Commander movie was on earlier tonight. I didn't get to watch it, though.
Oh, no. That's too bad.
It was on TV in Britain, like, for the first time I've ever been aware of it.
That's amazing. Well, how would you grade the Wii U and 3DS for 2014?
I had a pretty good year with both. Not amazing, but I ended up playing Mario Kart 8 a whole lot because the online was pretty good and off TV play. Yeah, and 3DS wise, bit of joy in Smash Brothers. Some of the digital stuff, Kirby was really good, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Bravely Kirby, Default is a weird one because that was technically 2013 in Europe.
Right.
So maybe I can't claim that one, but some of you could.
Hmm. Well, John, I think
like someone.
I played some Kirby this week, Kirby Triple Deluxe. I got it for my niece and I cracked it open early because she won't care. And I just started playing it and it's really good. I think it's my favorite Kirby game. I think it's really stellar. I mean, right off the bat, it just feels – I don't know that it's more difficult than other Kirby games, but I think it's more technical. I think it demands more of you to get the secret stuff and to even to like the first boss, I thought, you know, really took some skill, and that's I'm not really used to that in Kirby games. So it'll, I mean, and it looks fantastic as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think it looks really, really interesting. I'm excited to try it.
Shaman, Donald Terrio on the
chat. You're excited to try it, but it came out 11 months ago, Carl. So.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. As someone who skips all this stuff, I can just cycle back through later whenever I feel like it.
You obviously weren't too excited to try it, were you, Carl?
No.
Yeah, download the reminded me of Azure Striker Gunvolt, which I really, really enjoyed more than anyone else, it seems, on the podcast. But I do feel like it's a really, really strong action game on the 3DS. But that was like pretty late in the year, and I remember kind of setting aside August, the 3DS for almost all of the summer. So I don't know. Like if we have to give like a grade, I would give maybe a B minus to the 3DS.
Wow,
Wow.
I don't know. Bad.
Well, as an aside, I keep forgetting to say. Kind of wanted me to let everyone know that. The winner for the boss code word is Daniel Vell, who wins Club Nintendo Pack number 3. So congrats very much, Daniel. I think you've already won a couple things today. I'm telling you.
And not only do people actually win these things, but just to give people an idea of what's in the prize pack that we're giving away this hour, if you send your – what was the code word? Oh, Red Velvet, of course.
Mm-hmm. God
so if you send an email to contest@nintendoworldreport.com with the code word Red Velvet, you could win the Pure Digital Pack, which is a $20 eShop card, 2 DSiWare games, and a 3DS download code for I've Got to Run Complete Edition, courtesy of our friend Seren. So – that is a whole lot of stuff that you could win this hour, and all you have to do is send an email. It's easy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, and speaking of Seren, I know she wants to hop on a little bit later, so look forward to that coming soon and later in the show. Okay, so, you know, look, I think we're all sort of saying that with some rare exceptions and sort of spotty releases, it's looking like the 3DS sort of had maybe a little bit more of a downer year. But honestly,
it's been,
if you,
I don't know, it's just been
like, it was like America. All the life was on the coasts.
Well, here's sort of that's sort of the thing. I think honestly, it's a matter of perspective, though, because I think if you were to look at the numbers of, you know, consistently quality releases and compare them with the Wii U's, I'd say they're probably pretty consistent, not necessarily at the same time, but just as the like quantity wise. And yet people are saying this was a much better year for the Wii U. Is just that's how bad it was in year one?
Yeah, but it's the dynamics of it, because 3DS had been, you know, very busy relatively.
Yeah, last year 3DS,
you know, quite
was
recently,
very hot.
Whereas Wii U went through some really quiet periods. But
also, like, I guess
say, I think we're
sorry, go on.
I think we're more conditioned to consoles getting real hot towards the end of the year and handhelds staying kind of warm the entire length of the year. In general, handhelds tend to get, you know, they tend to get more games in the summer because kids are going on vacation and they're taking their systems with them, and they do a little bit better at sustaining throughout the year. At least Nintendo has historically. Versus this year, where it was like, hey, you're going to get a bunch of stuff at the beginning of the year. And if you're in Europe, that bunch of stuff was different than it was here. You're going to get a bunch of stuff at the end of the year, and in the middle, meh.
Especially as opposed to the extent that the 3DS at this point is retreating back into that sort of, you know, for younger people market, you know, the DS kind of broke out of for a while. But, you know, at this point, I mean, that market is under threat, of course, all the time, but that's kind of what they've got left, especially when, you know, they've already sold so many 3DSs to the more enthusiastic crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that the lower number of 3DS first-party releases this year might be related to the new version of the system coming out, and I suspect we might see kind of a new rash of stuff next year. I mean, some of it we know about, but I suspect a lot of it we don't know about yet.
Yeah, I think you'll see that in general. But I think there's a lot of stuff in the pipeline that is ready to be unleashed next year.
And some of that may also
Feel like 2015 might be better for 3DS than 2014, which might not be obvious, right? You might not necessarily expect that, especially given how long in the tooth that that system is getting for a handheld, especially. But From what we've seen and from what we sort of see coming, especially with the more powerful hardware, I have a pretty good feeling about next year.
Well, and some of it may have been all hands on deck on Wii U as well. I mean,
the other thing is that it was all hands on deck for the 3DS going back to like 2012. So stuff kind of essentially got brought forward. Think New Super Mario Brothers 2, for instance. Mm-hmm. So, and then that meant that they probably weren't doing as much with the Wii U as they should have been at that time. So mm-hmm. then you've got to kind of, you know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul that way. And yeah. so then the 3DS is the one that gets neglected once you start to correct that imbalance. So maybe things will start to get a bit more harmonious from now on, but we'll see.
Well, and that's why Nintendo's expanding. That's why they've talked about, you know, they're trying to be more efficient and combine their teams, but also we know that they've been growing and adding on new developers. And I think the reason they're doing that is because they see the future of their platforms is that they are probably going to have to make the vast majority of the quality software, of the software that's actually going to be selling the systems.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I mean, bringing new people in.
Over the past 10 years, they might have been under some kind of illusion that they still had a chance to bring the third parties in, and they had indications of that from time to time. I think at this point they really cannot fall back on that, and they know that these new games are harder to make and that they need to make more of them than ever before. So we're getting there.
Yeah, and it takes a while to spin those teams up too. You can't just hire people yeah. and have them sure. work right off the bat. It would take probably about a year.
Well, and we've seen that with the E3 showing and Wii U this year. All these games that are coming, they're stuff that is, you know, some of it is very clearly influenced by voices that aren't the voices that have been influencing things in the company in the past. Mm-hmm. They are the result of new bodies. Mm-hmm. So, but that's the kind of thing they're more willing to show. You know, it's much easier to show a Wii U game that's a year plus out than it is a 3DS game that's a year plus out. I think because you could still put together a flashy presentation of a playable game on a year out Wii U game. We're on a 3DS game that may be a lot harder.
They showed Codename Steam.
They did well,
awesome.
But we didn't get to play it though. That's the difference.
Like, no, somebody was playing it.
We got to play.
Watch
some
someone
Wii
play
games.
It for a long time.
We
so
did.
You know, it was a mature demo, as that goes, whatever that means. But
right. Well, so what about like partnering with more studios, like they have with Next Level? You know, like can they do that? Can they just like instead of trying to hire a lot of people internally, just
no, that's what they're talking about doing with these spin-off games, isn't it? That's what you've got Hyrule right. Warriors. They've said, oh, well, we think that's gone quite well, so we'll do more stuff like that. You know, we'll give other yeah. developers our properties.
Or like we talked about earlier, you can contract spin-off. Bayo too. I mean, you just say, we'll fund this
sure,
game.
Sure, but nothing like with Next Level, where it seems like Next Level is doing nothing but Nintendo games.
True. But I mean, I suppose that's the kind of thing they tend to nurture very gradually, you know.
Right.
When
I mean,
they kind
it's
of
like Monster. Like, I mean, like they had yeah. that kind of partnership with Monster Games, but they hand feed them stuff and say, you're going to work on this, or they'll say have Retro say, okay, partner with them to do something.
Yeah, all right, well, guys, I gotta cut you guys off there because we've got someone here on the line.
Oh.
And Seren, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, hey there. How's it going?
Hey.
Good.
All right. Well, before you know, I know you have some stuff to talk about, some of your work that you'd want to promote a little bit. But before we get to that, what do you think about report card wise? How would you get the 3DS and Wii U this year?
Well, I'm biased on 3DS because a 3DS game came out this year, Persona Q. Mm-hmm. Which I imported the Japanese 3DS of, which came with the game, and I imported the Japanese collector's edition, and I played the Japanese version through 4 times, and now I'm playing through the English version for review. So,
oh, God. So you're saying you like Persona?
I'm saying Persona Q is my all-time favorite 3DS game, so I've
another
gotten
300
hundreds
hours? Ching!
Yeah, I've gotten hundreds. I've gotten hundreds and hundreds of hours out of this, so yeah.
The year's not over. There's still that and Pokemon. So it's pretty
true.
Big
I mean, there are two more games coming for 3DS that are of note.
Yeah, Persona Q is absolutely worth noting if you like Etrian Odyssey, Persona 3, or Persona 4, because it is just everything you would want.
And you're okay with knowing some of your money is going to end up back in the hands of Sega.
Yeah, because in the Japanese version, they had us copyright Sega on the title screen, but not in the American version.
That's good.
Interesting.
It just says copyright Atlas USA Inc. in the...
They're hiding. They're hiding
yeah,
they're the hiding. Sad
that's what it's come down to.
Sega
that's how
hated they are.
Yeah,
it's not
America.
learn the dirty secrets they don't want you to know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Follow the money.
Follow the money. What was it someone earlier today said? NeoGAF, follow the money? What the hell was that about?
Yeah, don't trust NeoGAF. Yeah.
Well, you probably there's probably good reason not to trust NeoGAF.
It's just it's a little silly. That's all I'm saying. Forums for serious business. Well, I understand you have a couple things to promote, Saran.
Yeah. I'm launching a game on the 3DS eShop next week in North America and next month in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It failed lot check in Europe over the stupidest thing. So it was.
That's what lot check is for, though.
I can generally say basically they were like, well, if the SD card is damaged, you can't load your save file. And I'm like, if the SD card is damaged, you can't load the game. So why is this an issue? And they're like, it's an issue. So I'll go fix that, apparently.
Mm.
Europe has two E's. Yeah.
NOA just let it through. And so it's launching next week. There's a prize. An early download code is in the current prize pack for hourly. Mm. There was also another one for radio trivia that got claimed.
Yeah, thank you for that.
No problem. Yes. I'm really happy with how it goes. It has Armillo from the Wii U game and Kubi from BitBoy Arcade. And it is a very pick-up-and-play runner that I am very happy to now have on my retail 3DS because I take it everywhere I go. Just honestly, I just love playing it like on the bus. So it's perfect portable game.
It's nice when you can make something that you enjoy, because that, you know, then you don't have to worry as much about whether other people enjoy it.
That's although been the money experience. Would be nice because it's expensive and very hard to make 3DS games. But
of course, there's a lot to be said though for making something for yourself and then other people, presumably like-minded people, will also like it rather than trying to make something for other people and maybe you don't actually understand at all what they really want and then you ultimately end up making something that really nobody wants.
Exactly. So I'm trying to launch the game on 3DS and get all that PR done, which is great because I'm launching it on a day that I'm going to be in airports all day.
Fun.
I'm going to Canada for a weekend. So.
Oh, Canada. God.
Yeah.
Canada, how that is.
It's like, who the hell needs to go to Canada for anything? Am I right?
Exactly. Amen.
And then I'm working full time, full production on two games, a big one and then a smaller one. And that smaller one, I think, is the only thing I'm going to say about it for quite a few months, but I think the next one might be a launch title for whatever Nintendo calls the new Nintendo 3DS over here.
From what I understand, though, I Gotta Run has like one of the best French translation for its manual has ever graced the eShop. Am I right?
Yeah, Guillaume. Full disclosure, translated the e-manual because Nintendo wanted a French translation for that. So there you go.
No, was it Emmanuel or Emmanuel?
Oh, boy.
I just got that, Johnny. That's terrible.
Yeah. I was laughing way before I got it, but I got it now.
It's terrible.
So yeah. I don't know if we have time, but Johnny did tell me that I should ask one of my questions during.
Oh, feel free.
Oh,
should be really quick because we do have other people we want to get on the call.
I will go really quick. Virtual console notwithstanding, which company is currently in better standing with the Nintendo community? Ubisoft, Konami, or Capcom? Capcom and Konami don't do anything, period, but Ubisoft doesn't do anything on Nintendo platforms specifically. However, Konami and Capcom have beloved IPs such as Castlevania and Mega Man that they're actively not using on Nintendo platforms or elsewhere.
I would probably say Capcom.
At this point,
Konami.
Personally, at this point, I just want to get in the office people running Capcom and scream at them for like 7 hours.
Well, but, because they've actively yanked stuff. Like,
I mean, they're like, hey, remember Mega Man? And here's some cat armor. And it's like, no, fuck you. That's not what I want.
This game is ready to ship, but we're just going to burn them. because we don't.
Hey, remember that demo for Mega Man Legends 3? Nah, that's not happening. I mean, yeah, Capcom does make games though. They just make Monster Hunter,
right?
Monster,
and or they port Ace Attorney 1 through 3.
It's true, they did, right. And it's we didn't upgrade the music from the chip tunes because we thought this is the music people like. Yeah, that is an actual quote from a PR rep that I got from a Capcom booth. Thank you, Capcom.
Capcom's a total mess, but I don't think there's any doubt that they have the best support for Nintendo platforms right now. And especially when you throw in virtual console stuff, it's not even close.
Yeah, so, I mean, Konami, like you said, Konami is actively doing nothing at this point.
Yeah, but I think
they are the biggest holding company right now.
You know? Right, and I'm disappointed that Konami is not doing anything with its Hudson kind of properties. I guess I'm one of the few fans out there.
They're not doing anything with any of their properties. They're just releasing Metal Gear Solid 5 trailers every few months.
There's a Bonk game that's almost finished that never came out.
I think it was completely finished.
Yeah. Brink of Extinction. Yeah, I know it was really close at least.
I mean, it was on 360 and PS3, so that wouldn't be hard to dump on the Wii U eShop.
Yep. Did it actually come out on those other systems?
No. Okay. It didn't come out anywhere. It went gold.
I don't know if it was any good.
It went gold about a week before Hudson was closed, I believe.
All right.
Well, Soren, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. And best of luck for your launch.
Yeah, thanks.
Congrats again, and thank you for donating those codes. I know our winners are really going to enjoy them.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All righty.
Bye-bye.
All right, so we're going to have someone else on in just a moment. We're actually going to bring Luca back on. It's sort of become a tradition at this point to bring him on at the top and at the end of the show. I don't understand how someone in such a faraway time zone could stay up that late. I mean, Greg, you're pretty close, but still.
It's 2:39. It's not that late.
It's a lot to ask, and I appreciate
it's
that
Luca
stays up this late.
But it's not like it's like, hey, it's 6 in the morning.
Luca, aren't you sleepy?
Yeah, just a bit. But I went to the Milan Games Week just a couple of weeks ago. And in that occasion, I have slept like 9 hours in 2 days. So I'm pretty good today.
Okay.
Nice. Dedication, I like it.
Yeah, so I forgot to mention that Don is also in a faraway time zone. He stayed up as well. I always forget.
That's fair.
Don is, he's ubiquitous. Hey, Don is always.
Luca, I know this probably isn't what you wanted to talk about, but I mean, I'm vaguely familiar with it. Can you tell us what the Milan Games Week is?
Yeah, sure.
I bet a lot of our listeners have probably not heard of it before.
I have not heard of it.
Well, it's like the Eurogamer Expo, on just a little bit of on a smaller scale. I think they're doing multiple events in different European cities, like it was the Madrid Games Week and the Paris Games Week. So it's basically giving us the chance to have a smaller event, but a gaming event nonetheless in our country. Because, you know, in Europe we have the Cologne event and the Eurogamer Expo, now named EGX, and that is relocating to Birmingham next year, I think. So we.
I was born in Birmingham.
Yeah, but
so was I
think...
but I was born in the Birmingham that he's actually talking about.
Yes,
I think two different.
Greg and I are brothers.
So
brothers from another mother country
and continent. So basically, the event wasn't really packed with new content. I, of course, visited the Nintendo stand, and I tried Splatoon, and I was really fond of it.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, it was fun because all the Nintendo reps were doing was actually stand there and joke between themselves. And I actually had the opportunity to do some of their work, and then I described the game to the people the standing by, and so I had a pin to as a prize for my work, but but the game was really fun, and it was cool to have 8 human players in a team, a four player team, actually playing against one another, and it. They said there are many, many different modes coming. So I was really excited to try that. But apart from that, and there wasn't really much. Yeah, we had this Mesh U demo station and a couple of other interesting things, but not much on the indie side, for example. That was really disappointing.
It's cool though that they're willing to put games like Splatoon out on these public event circuits, even though that game's not coming out this year.
Yeah,
like it's good that they have the awareness that it's good for them to have people start talking about this thing early.
It also speaks well to how confident they are in its continued development that they're still willing to put it out on sort of a public show.
Yeah, and I think it's also good to see that there is kind of this rise of more of these public events. Because I know there's a few games. I'm not sure if it's a franchise or if it's just one organization that just tours around. But I know there's a few in Europe at this point. And it's good that, you know, these communities get served. Because, I mean, for a long time, the only thing we had here that was public really was PAX. And that was up in the Pacific Northwest. If you live anywhere else, deal with it.
Well, there was that one year that they had the E for All.
Yeah, it was like the same week as PAX.
Yeah, and it tanked.
Yeah, go figure. So, sorry to have knocked you off your question, Luca. What did you want to talk about?
Oh, really? I wanted to talk about how disappointed I am in this shenanigan section because, guys, this is too professional. It's so serious. What the hell?
I rallied my way onto the show. What more do you want?
Yeah.
When you don't know. What you don't know that I'm wearing.
We did have a segment where we devoted a significant amount of time to pornography as a topic of conversation. So, I mean...
Look, I'm Luca, if you... Go ahead.
I'm doing the segment wearing a diaper, so...
Yeah, I mean,
I'm doing my part.
Luca, look at it this way. We're about to talk about Wing Commander in about 17 minutes, and it's going to get raw.
Yeah, this is the Oasis.
I spend no less from you guys.
Yes, you expect more, and by which we mean you expect less.
You spoiled us with your Red Velvet story, so how can you top that?
Well, you know, maybe I have a few, but maybe I have a girlfriend this time around when we're doing shenanigans, and you know, maybe I don't want to get all that stuff out in public. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Everybody grows up. This is grown up shenanigans, I guess.
Yeah.
Grown up shenanigans. Remember, kids, when you grow up, life becomes dull and boring.
Yep. Yeah. After this, doing my taxes. Thanks, guys.
How long will it be until shenanigans is just all of our children in the background?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's so reasonable. Oh, speaking of which, I have a little shout out to make to our friend Austin, who is not here tonight because he's in the hospital celebrating his newborn baby. So best wishes.
I did see that. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, yeah. Congrats very much so. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. It's probably a very, very memorable night and not for what we're doing here.
We really are growing up.
Although, wouldn't you guys just love it if we, like, because you know they let you have a playlist in the delivery room. What if it was just us piping into that delivery room?
That's really disturbing.
Baby, look at me. Look at me right now.
Yeah.
This is as good as it's ever going to get. Everything else is downhill.
I just want to speak directly to the mother. I hope you're fully dilated. I want to pep talk you through this process, okay? So breathe, push. Shenanigans.
And don't worry. Look, everyone eats the placenta.
Battle 64 again.
Oh, all right, Carl. All right. That's
Red Velvet.
No.
Oh, now we're talking.
The chat wants to know, going back to one of our less professional moments, who was it that almost lit the bed on fire? Which I believe was Obi, was it not?
No, so that's a callback to PAX East 2010, the drunk cast especially.
Mm-hmm. John has fallen off the bed at this point.
Why is my name coming up in this? I have no
because
idea.
Because you did fall off a bed, John.
John it's
you
a big
fell
bed.
Off a stationary object
hey, James.
While
hey, James.
Sitting.
Stop, drop, and roll.
It's a big bad.
John fell off the bed. He also, that's where he famously uttered, "Man, fuck Super Mario Galaxy" for the first time. But he also, this is also the time when Obi, because Obi has a tendency to like fiddle with stuff, you know, for all of us who've hung out with him in person.
he has a tendency to just sort of grab whatever around and try to like take it apart or just sort of stretch it out. And so he had this box of matches, you know, because in every hotel room they'll put some like just around. And he just starts like playing with fire. He's just like looking at it. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm just doing matches. And then he drops them out of like confusion and like.
because like, Obi, what are you doing?
Yeah. And then he just, you know, it drops him. Luckily, it was a match. It went out immediately, of course. But yeah, there was a minute there where, you know, we almost threw Obi onto the fire to put it out.
It'll be the first time a fireman will come out. So, yeah. 11 people died from this smoking in bed incident. I don't know how that happened.
All right. Well, look, Luca, we got some other people to get to here before we close out. But thank you so much for calling in today, and really for listening and for being a part of our crazy party every year.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate all your kind words, and it's very very. Important to me that you appreciate my presence here. It's not much, I know, but I really love to be a small part, and I steer the discussion in the desired direction. So my work is done.
Yes, I think you've accomplished your goal there.
Yeah, look, you got me to say placenta. All right, it happened. Oh, I did. I promised someone I would say something, and they would donate money.
Placentas. That's right.
Because no, I was thinking of like, you know what reminds me of a placenta? San Antonio. And I got to say, someone asked me someone asked me if I would, because I famously, well, infamously, I guess, when PAX South was announced for San Antonio, Texas, I got on Twitter and was a little bit of, not upset really, but just kind of confused as to why they would choose San Antonio for PAX South. And I said, you know, San Antonio is a toilet. What are they going to choose for PAX Midwest? Gary, Indiana. You know,
which is awesome if you've ever read anything about Gary, Indiana.
Yeah.
I may have tweeted that at the mayors of San Antonio and Gary, respectively. I don't know.
So basically what happened afterwards was some San Antonian saw this and was a little bit upset that I said this about their city. And then it sort of circulated. There was like a hashtag about PAX San Antonio. And all of a sudden I started getting a lot of like messages from people saying like, hey, San Antonio's cool. Fuck you. Like, and it's, at first I was like, oh, I guess it's just like probably like a couple people who maybe like follow me or follow someone who, you know, reply or something. It turned into like 25, 30 times that people were coming after me to say like, hey, you should really not say that about San Antonio. And I didn't care then, and I don't really care now. But
it's the Alamo, Carl. Fuck you. It's history.
Yeah.
It's actually the Chamber of Commerce. They just search Twitter for people talking shit about San Antonio, and they go after them.
Now somebody's going to call into the show and get mad at us.
Mm-hmm. But no, but seriously, on the real, it's for a good cause like ours today, and for someone to say they're going to donate money to it, they must come from a good place. And so I will say that I am sorry for saying what I said about San Antonio
your shithole city. I'm sorry.
You know, I'm sure you love it, and I'm sure you love it for all the right reasons. So
what you're saying is, for the right price, the truth that comes out of your mouth can be altered.
Yeah. The truth is all about who has the most money, John.
Yeah.
Well, I have heard that San Antonio has the greatest cattle show in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it's a Twitter.
Did you hear that from Carl Castaneda?
I will not reveal my sources.
well, thank you, Luca.
Disclosure, John. Come on.
All right, so I know we're gonna bring somebody else on in a bit, someone who's been trying to get on for a while, but you know we're coming up on the end here. We've got 10 minutes to go, so while Don sort of figures that out and gets them in, I think that will probably end up being our last person. I gotta throw it out to you guys. You know, unsaid words. This is we only get to do shenanigans but once a year, and this is the final bit.
Thank goodness. For 2014.
That's right.
So, final words, last thing you want to say, what do you want to leave folks with? Or at least, you know, for everyone who isn't Johnny and myself, because we're going to talk about Wing Commander in like 9 minutes, but for Greg, we don't get to hear from you very often at all.
Tell us about the Bills, Greg. How do you feel the Bills
are doing? ESPN.com or something. Why would you ask me?
Yeah.
Hey, because you're the only one that knows about the Bills.
It's not like there's some secret team that only I can see.
Hey, Greg, isn't there like an NFL team in Canada you follow? Can you tell me about them?
Yeah.
Yeah, that threat is over. Go fuck yourself.
I know. Would you have been that upset if they became the Toronto Bulls?
Well, it's cool. Now they're owned by John Bon Jovi. That's pretty cool. So,
I mean,
Earth 2 or alternate universe. Jesus Christ.
Well, look, I mean, Greg, what I want to know is, you know, has the NFL taken England by storm now? They're hosting, you know, games there?
Why do they keep putting shitty games there, Greg?
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, the Bills are coming next year. I'll be one of those 80,000 and pissing all over the Jags on the field advantage. So, is that taking the country by storm? Not really, but it makes money.
So you must be excited for that, though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it'd be good. It'd be the first time I see a Bills game in 13 years at that point. Like, you know, in person, obviously. I wasn't every week.
I've heard the English commentary is hilarious because there's so much time to fill with so many less commercials.
It's not so much commentary as like the in-studio host or the, you know, like the side. Like, yeah, that's pretty toco. I pretty much never watch the Wembley games that wouldn't have the Bills in them because there's other games that you can watch that aren't fucking embarrassing for the country.
I'm asking this as seriously, like, why is it that these games always end up involving terrible teams?
Because they can't strong arm really popular. It's like, oh yeah, they're going to get Green Bay to give up a home game where they've got a waiting list for season ticket the last 30 fucking years. What do you think? You know,
you're right. No, you're right. Yeah. You're right. I stand corrected.
Of course, like it's Jacks or Miami or, you know, where they can't fill stadium or whatever. And then at best, the away team is somebody like the Cowboys, you know, but that's
the Cowboys sans Romo.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah, it's not going that badly anyway, so let's see.
Well, I think we have Zach on the line here. Zach, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hey, man, Zach. How's it going?
Yo.
It's going well. I'm really proud of you guys. You made the Zach Kaplan stretch goal.
Yes.
I mean, that's what Don told me. I think that I got in because they raised enough money that everyone wanted me.
Yep. Look, it's like right, Wendy said, money talks, and I'm listening.
Yep.
All right. Well, what would you say how would you grade the 3DS and Wii U this year? Just to kind of go on theme.
Well, apparently you do. Well, 3DS. I only just started playing mine again, like, the past week, so I'm going to give it a C.
Mm-hmm.
Wii U, I only started playing it again the past month, so I'm going to give it a B.
Yeah, I've seen that you've been unfaithful, and on Twitter, you've been discussing mobile or Android, like that streaming device for the computer.
Android
He's all about that NVIDIA Shield.
Yes.
No, well, see, the thing is, I completely just got burnt out on Nintendo. I mean, as a valuable member of the Nintendo fan community, I have to keep appearances and try and be positive about Nintendo, but sometimes you just have to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Totally.
You're playing Ouya games, aren't you?
Oh, I haven't. I haven't stooped that. I haven't gone down that path.
Zach, are you saying sometimes being unfaithful is the only way to protect your long-term commitment?
Yes, definitely, and everyone should take that advice.
Nice.
No.
Nice. A lesson learned here today, everybody.
Why have we turned into these morally bankrupt, shady individuals in the last
year? We teach as well as
understand. Is this the Italian influence? What's going on here?
Yeah.
Oh. James, don't even start, dude.
Don't even start. Cool. Have you been to Italy lately?
Oh, no, we had Luke on the show and everything went to hell as soon as we did.
That was his stated purpose, and he succeeded.
I know, mission accomplished.
Yep. He called us out, man.
Calling us out. All right, well, we are in the final five, gentlemen, the last 5 minutes of the show. Zach, before we say goodbye, any last words?
Yes. I just want to let everyone know, if they street pass me, my Nintendog's message is touching puppies.
Oh.
I just push the boundaries. Diver. Yeah, I just push boundaries here. Best telethon ever.
Pushing boundaries. All right. Awesome. Well, so Johnny and I are sticking around for the next segment. We're going to be bringing in our good buddy from Box Office Boys and Stan Ferguson. But we're saying goodbye to some of the RFN crew here. So let's just go around the room so they can say their goodbyes, their thank yous, their please come save us. Let's start with Mr. John Lindemann.
I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and I guess I'll see you on Sunday. Yes, that's it. Nothing too pithy out here. Just
see you on Sunday. See you what? Are you going to be spying on us? What do you mean?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a visual podcast. It's going to be involve interpretive dance.
Naked interpretive dance, I would assume.
Yeah. It'll probably have the naughty parts blurred out, but yeah.
Probably. No promises.
Probably. Maybe there'll be a little bit of overlap, you know, just to tease, but
it'll be Is John's interpretive dance show John Lindemann licensed to writhe?
Oh. This is dedicated to Corey Haim. Rest in peace.
All right. How about Mr. Guillaume Veillette?
I'm just happy to have a break from editing. Mm-hmm. So thank you, everyone, for
donating.
Oh, that's
my line. No, wait. That was my line 2 years ago. Sorry.
But Guillaume, aren't you going to split up the recording for us?
Are you crazy? I'm not touching that.
Okay.
Isn't maybe Carl doing this usually? Oh.
No, man.
usually I do it.
Awkward.
Oh, really?
Nope.
Yes, usually I do it.
Hey, guys, remember when we were talking about the prep? I'm like, hey, if we just move the file out every hour, we don't have to worry about this shit. I'm just saying. I threw it out there.
That would be nice. But
window behind the curtain.
I doubt that's what happened.
That is exactly what happened, isn't it, Carl? Didn't I mention doing precisely that?
James, I have
no
idea.
And he was like, oh, that's too much work.
So, yeah, all just right. Keep donating, and thanks for the break, everyone.
All right, how about you, James?
Yeah, so it's been another amazing year of doing this, and I don't know why you people hang out with us all day, because we do stuff like talk about Bubble Bobble with pixelated women, but we do this, and you seem to like it, so we thank you for that. We thank you for your generosity, and thank God we made through all this.
We did make it through. I mean, we're although we're not standing where we could be, we could do so much more. We're currently at $5,574.75.
But at the very least, we get a moment to decompress from this before we do that. So that's.
James, I don't live my life decompressed. I'm just clenched 24/7.
Yeah, she shows.
One day that will serve you well, Carl.
All right. Any? I know, Greg. I've already sort of asked you this, but any sort of last parting words?
Well, excellent job on the telethon. I haven't heard it all yet. Looking forward to certain segments. I heard like the first couple of hours live, and then the last couple of hours live, but not in the middle. Unlicensed to drive, so you know,
you're in for a
future
treat there,
me.
Buddy.
I don't know what you're gonna make of that, but and of course, yeah, the donors again, another great year of donations. But yeah, the main thing is to keep going after the telethon's over, even because there's still gonna be some goals and some time to meet that. I did have a sort of serious question about the Majora's Mask thing, because I thought that was relevant, given we did the retroactive about 2 years ago, which was the one thing you wanted them to improve in the game for the new version. If anybody's got something on the spot, I'll take
frame
it.
Frame rate, please.
Okay.
Please, and we'll get
the layer of Vaseline between the game and the user.
Yeah.
I think have you seen the video, man? They took care of that. That trailer looks amazing, I thought.
I think those things are kind of already safe, yeah.
Yeah, for me, actually, it's the menu stuff, and I didn't play Ocarina 3D, so I don't know how close they got to, you know, perfecting it on there. But in Majora, you know, especially in the Stone Temple, that fourth big dungeon,
the song.
Like changing masks constantly and playing the song over and over again gets real tedious. And I think anything you can do to sort of speed up those little small things that really add up, if you can, you know, streamline those things, make them easier to do, that'll be a big help.
There's a lot of those sorts of things in Majora's Mask, but the Ocarina of Time port bodes well in that regard, because things like the iron boots, yeah, they made them like an equipable thing that you could have on the touchscreen rather than the menu thing, and that just completely made the water temple a lot more doable and all that. So they know the kinds of things needs. And if we go along with the idea, this has been in development pretty much since Ocarina of Time 3D. They've had a hell of a long time to think about all the things that need to be ironed out. So I think it's going to be great.
Yeah. Yes. I'll be curious to see if the Bomber's notebook changes very much. I think you could probably present that information in a better way to make some of those quests a little more accessible, especially the really complex ones. And you know, there's a lot they could actually add more side quests, because Majora's Mask is like really built for just having massive numbers of side quests. It already has a ton. I feel like you could probably add some new characters and some new things to do in the Bomber's Notebook if they really want to get ambitious with it. You could do that without adding new dungeons and stuff like that, you know. But if you could even add like a whole new row of masks, or even, you know, some of those masks, make them more useful, make them something that you might actually want to use in the action part of the game. I think that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of it's a big, rich, complex game. There's a lot you could do.
Yeah. All right. Well, I am going to have to call time there, folks. It's time to close this one up and move on into our next segment. But it's been a pleasure, gentlemen, to have you on here. So good night, John. Good night, James.
Thank you.
Good night, Greg.
Good night. Good night, all my fans.
Good night, Moon.
Good night, Moon. Good
night. All right. So, having said all of this, I believe there's really only one thing to say. And Stan,
turn off the stream.
What?
Turn off the stream, buddy.
Off the stream.
I don't have the stream on.
Somebody
did. All right. Someone did. So I think the only thing left to say at this point is, in association with Crosstalk.com, NintendoWorldReport.com, and listeners just like you, you're listening to Box Office Poison, the podcast all about movies and movie things. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda, and on this episode we have got Johnny Metz.
Heidely ho.
Stan Ferguson.
I love you all.
And no one else.
For now.
For now. You know, unfortunately, our good buddy John Rin cannot be here. He's working. He's working tonight, so he cannot be here. And Mike Sklens had a similarly maybe not valid excuse. But we are here for a very, very special reason, guys. You know how special this is to me and to everyone listening. And that's because, you know, once a year we watch a movie that's tangentially related to video games in some way and then discuss it here on this live program. And this year we're talking about Wing Commander.
Oh, guys, this movie, guys, I am so excited about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have things to say.
You have something to say, but we should sort of lay it out. This is directed by Chris Roberts. No, I don't know who that is either.
Well, he's the developer of Wing Commander.
Yeah, so this bears some explanation, actually. So sounds like Stan is in the know. Carl didn't do his research, but Chris Roberts is the director of the Wing Commander video games series and directed all the famous cutscenes in those games starring Mark Hamill and Malcolm McDowell. And so the idea of him then doing his own adaptation of his own game series must have seemed like a really fantastic idea in the late 90s, and it obviously didn't turn out very well. But I should also note Chris Roberts is the man behind Star Citizen, which is the spiritual successor to the Wing Commander computer game series and is now the most successful crowdfunded project in the history of mankind. So he's doing okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
$55 million okay.
He kept all that money. I mean, that's how he funded Star Citizen. And by the way, we do have to give out a code word for this segment, and the code word or code phrase, I should say, or it's one word. It is Pilgrim. Yeah. So send Pilgrim into contest@NintendoWorldReport.com to claim our last prize pack of the day.
That's the only choice.
Now, in the intervening time, we brought in a Thai sugar, it appears.
Yes!
Yay!
Sounds like now, Ty took his cat drugs.
Ty requested to be in for Wing Commander. I don't know why anyone would request to be on for Wing Commander. I certainly didn't. And
I love garbage video game movies.
Garbage? This was brilliant.
As if there are any other kind.
Now, Stan, since you seem to be such a fan, if you were to describe Wing Commander to the layman, how would you describe its brilliance?
Hard sci-fi. Fabulous accents. Dingy work environments. Oh my God, witty banter. Like when blonde haired dude walks in and he's like, oh, you can either kick my ass or you can drink my whiskey. And then Rosie says, I would have done both. Oh my God. Awesome dialogue. All right. Not Chris was one of my favorite actors in this thing. All right. Plus, they had dildo chess. What is not to like about this movie?
I mean, I don't think you said anything about what the movie's about, but I suppose
The movie's about your typical story about a guy who it's a superhero origin story where the superpower is navigating things quickly.
Yeah,
you're kind of right there. Yeah,
the year is 2654. And an interstellar war is raging between the Terran Confederation and the cat-like alien Karathi.
It's space wars with space lions.
Yes.
There, and I just saved you like 5 minutes.
Yeah, Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard are sort of space pilots in whatever army they're in. And basically, they gotta retrieve a stolen NavCom system that has the coordinates that lead to Earth. And then later on, they need to help defend Earth from the sort of invading force of cat people.
Cat drugs.
Yes.
Cat drugs, yes. They are on some serious cat drugs in this movie. Every time you see them in this whole movie, they're obscured by a thick cloud of smoke.
Well, and that's for good reason, because the costumes or whatever the hell those things are when the Kilrathi aliens finally show up look terrible. And I think you only see them for like maybe 5 minutes in the entire movie. There's like an action scene where they board a Kilrathi ship and they end up doing some hand-to-hand combat, and that's pretty much the only time you see the bad guys in the entire movie. It's like 5 minutes right in the middle, and I wonder if it's because they screwed up the props and the costuming so bad. I wonder if even the studio looked at this, at the other scenes that they shot with that stuff, and said, oh, you're not putting this out. I mean,
so they did. What happened was, I did do a little homework. What happened was that they were initially the Kilrathi had fur.
Yeah.
But what happened was they thought it looked so weird and bizarre that they just took it out and used the same figures.
You see them a lot more in the computer games, in all those live action FMV cutscenes that they shot for the Wing Commander game series. Mm-hmm. And they look goofy, but honestly, they look way better than the kind of like plasticky, gross looking things that you see in this movie.
How embarrassing.
I think they were going for the Jaws thing, where you keep your villain away from the camera for as long as possible. And then when you see them, it's like, ah, scary.
It's not like that at all, though.
It's not even close to that.
Yeah.
Muppets attack.
Yeah, seriously. This is, you know, it really is one of those things where you look at it and it's basically just like they found it on like the back lot of Star Trek and they were just like, yeah, we can use this.
Yeah, they look like Doctor Who villains to me. I mean, they're just really bad. And this is an expensive looking movie at times. Some of the space scenes, I think, you know, for 1999, I think some of the computer graphics are pretty good. But mm-hmm. then when they go up close on those aliens, you wish they hadn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, on that note, I did throw it out, by the way, yesterday on Twitter that we were going to be talking about Wing Commander. And I said, if you have any questions or comments for us about the movie, send them my way. I'll put them out here to the crew. And I have four here from folks who want to know what we think about Wing Commander in the following ways.
Yes.
First one comes from Sarek, who was on the show earlier today, who says he has multiple questions. It's a four-part question. He says, how are the cat people, A? How
I game think we've covered that one.
The answer is bad.
Yeah, they're real bad.
His second question is, how game accurate are the ships and lore? And the answer is not very. I did read up about this, and apparently the whole concept of the Pelgrim thing was made up for this game, for this movie.
Yeah.
I will say, I'm glad they made Maniac a central character. Mm-hmm. For me, he's like one of the most memorable characters from the game. So there you go.
Yeah, Maniac. What's his actual name? Is it like Maniac Murphy or something?
I don't recall off the top of my head, but
I think it's Matthew Lillard.
No, so his name is, he is First Lieutenant Todd Maniac Marshall.
Yeah.
There we go.
Nostalgia.
Yeah. Third question here comes from Sarek, says, is there a simulator in a bar? The answer is no.
Nope.
There is no simulator. Was that in the games? And if so, was that just a direct ripoff from Star Trek?
It was in the third one. I know the one with Mark Hamill and Malcolm McDowell.
And the porn star and the Muppet.
And the porn star and the Muppet. Yes.
And then his final question here is, any people smuggling? And the answer is also no.
No. Though not Chris Lambert does look like a smuggler until you realize he's not a smuggler.
Did you say Chris Lambert? Is he in this movie?
Not Chris Lambert.
Not Chris Lambert. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, which character are you talking about there, Stan?
The French dude?
Oh, you're talking about Commodore James Paladin Taggart.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not French. He's Turkish, and he doesn't look like Christopher Lambert at all. But okay.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been rad if he was.
Yes.
Yeah, Christopher Lambert should have been in this movie. That would have helped.
Now, we have another question here that comes from Nuggets, who says, he says, and this is literally, I said, we're talking about Wing Commander. His follow-up question is just two words, and it is, but why?
Well,
that's a really good question, Nuggets.
I can tell you every reason to watch this movie.
Please, Stan, please.
All right. One, it's possibly the best film ever made that's not about the title character. All right. There are wings. There are commanders. There is even a commander of the wings. But the movie has nothing to do with her. It has everything to do with Freddie Prinze Jr. Mm-hmm. All right. Who is not a wing commander. Never becomes a wing commander. And is just amazing. All right. Then it has the best, like, I'm gonna kill you line by Taggart when he goes, au revoir, mes amis. Oh, man. That means goodbye, my friends. That's badass. All right. And I am looking forward to the sequel, Fleet Admiral, which is about a civilian ship captain with the ability, the superpower, to eat exactly the amount of calories he needs in a day. I am so stoked about this movie. And the only criticism that I can apply to this film is there is not enough David Warner. He shows up for the first third, then at the very end, what's up with that? When you've got David Warner in a movie, you put him through the whole thing. I love David Warner. There's not a role he has played that I just haven't eaten up with a spoon. Do you know who he is in this movie?
He is Admiral Geoffrey Tolwyn.
Yeah, the British dude.
Yes, well, what that guy.
British dude.
Yes.
But there's a lot of British people in this movie, actually. But what is he famous for? I recognize his face, but I can't figure out where I know him from.
I think the most popular thing he did, and that's a really interesting way of putting the word, he played a character in Star Trek V.
So there's that.
Yeah.
But look, I don't think there's any weirder casting than Jürgen Prochnow as Commander Paul Gerard, or Gerald, who is the guy from fucking Das Boot.
And Dune. He plays Plato Atreides in Dune. Yeah. David Lynch's Dune.
Like, when you saw him, were you like, wait, what?
No, it totally makes sense because this movie, Wing Commander, is obsessed with trying to be like a submarine movie in space, and it's so shitty at it. I can't even believe they tried. If you look at the sets, they're all like, you know, low ceilings and like pipes hanging down and steam and stuff, and everyone talks like naval commanders. They do broadsides. The main ship that the movie takes place on is kind of like an aircraft carrier, but sometimes it operates like a submarine, and it's all ridiculous. Like, I can't get over how stupid the spaceships are in this movie. I mean, the Rapiers, the small ones that, you know, that the main characters fly around in, these are the same ships that I presume that you control in the games. I haven't actually played a Wing Commander game, but
talk about those metal sausages.
They just look like World War II planes in space. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Why would they be designed like that? Why would they look like that? It's really, really silly.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, good question. But we have another question here from Pete, who says, I've actually seen this movie. What the fuck are you guys doing watching it? But really, what's up with all the weird Star Wars references? Is the whole thing with the pilgrims just an allusion to the Force? Also, does Johnny think this is an accurate portrayal of spaceflight?
No.
Saw this movie. Carl emailed to us, watch this movie. This is not a suggestion. It's an order.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I said. And then I said, what is it? What's the line again? It was a Arrivederci, mon ami.
Mes
amis. Au revoir, mes amis, of course.
I speak a little Italian myself.
Arrivederci. No, I put it out.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno. No, I put it out there that these guys ought to watch it because I think we were sort of bringing it down to a handful of options here, and you know, basically, I think Johnny was pushing for what was
the
it again?
Last Starfighter.
The Last Starfighter, because it's
trying to get, which is basically the good version of Wing Commander. They're pretty similar. I mean, they really are, but you know, one is good and one is bad.
Yeah, and then we were also thinking about, Pokemon the movie did come up for a bit, I think. And then I was always pushing us to do Mortal Kombat 2 Annihilation so that we could annihilate all expectations. But these guys didn't want to do that.
I got to talk about that movie for 1 second.
Annihilation?
Yeah.
Yes. One of my very first experiences as a nerdy video game journalist was being in on an interview with the director of that movie.
He
came off as weird. A little weird.
You can say that about the movie.
Yeah. Like, this was before, like, it was finished or it was in post-production. Nobody had seen it in any case. Ooh. And just the way he hyped it up was a little uncomfortable. It's like, yeah, we have a scene with chicks fighting in mud. It's going to be awesome, dudes.
Well, you know, there were so few films that had chicks fighting in mud prior to Mortal Kombat Annihilation that he was a pioneer.
And then it was ripped off into old school.
Look, no one had the balls to, and you know, I think that movie came out like 95 or something, or like 97, to put the actual in-game, not only sound effects, but visual effects in the film. When Johnny Cage gets killed in the first 5 minutes of the movie, not a spoiler, when Shao Kahn comes to Earth to like take it over, Johnny Cage gets up and then does his shadow kick, and the shadow kick like animation is literally taken out of like Mortal Kombat 3.
Nice.
It is. Yep. It is frighteningly bad. And
the
then
special
it's,
effects for that entire movie are frighteningly bad.
Then Katana's or Katara's mother or something? Like, I don't know. She comes up and she's like, "Mother, but I thought you were dead." And Sindel says, "Yes, too bad you have to die."
Video game movies.
Oh, man. The sad thing there is I think the first Mortal Kombat is actually pretty fun to watch. I think and at the time that movie had pretty decent special effects, if nothing
else.
And
it had Chris Lambert.
Yeah, it did.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun movie to watch. No way around it.
Yeah. Whereas Annihilation, it never looked like it would be remotely entertaining to me.
Well, you know, it didn't have that Christopher Lambert magic. Is what
you
happened.
Know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They took him out for that one. They got replaced with the like rapist guy from the Warriors.
They couldn't afford Christopher Lambert. He was just too high powered an actor for that movie.
And I mean, you know, unfortunately, there could be only one, and they had to go with that other guy.
He was probably making Fortress at the time. Fortress is a good movie. If you like B sci-fi B movies, I think Fortress is stellar. But anyway, back to Wing Commander. Speaking of sci-fi D movies,
yeah. So, but Pete's asking us, like, do we think this is just a straight like the whole thing with the
pilgrims being able to, and I think the explanation is that they can navigate through space using only space, which seems like a weird explanation, but basically
it's an internal GPS.
Yeah, well, it's basically just like that part at the end of like A New Hope where, you know, instead of using the nav system, Obi-Wan tells Luke to like use the Force to kind of like feel it out.
I didn't even think of that comparison. That makes sense, I suppose. But the concept there is not that it's some magical, you know, aspect of nature that they can tap into, but that it's just an ancestral ability. It's more instinctual. It's like how a baby bird is born and then uses some kind of magnetic resonance sense to know how to fly north from south, you know, yeah, or something like that.
It's like Taggart says, you don't need face. It's genetic.
Yeah. It's like which makes it sound more science-y, even though it still doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But yeah, so the idea is that you know they use these complex computer AIs to plot their jump points in space when they go faster than light. And there's also something – they don't explain this really in the movie, but all I could pick up from context is that they can only do their faster-than-light jumps at certain places. Like you have to be near some kind of gravitational well, so you have to do it near a pulsar, or you have to do it, I don't know, near some kind of weird, you know, gravity anomaly thing. It seems like they can't just do it wherever they want to. So this main character played by Freddie Prinze Jr. at the height of his powers, he has some kind of, this ability that he was born with that no one understands to do all that stuff without the computer. He just knows how to do it. He can navigate space.
Which I think we can all agree is the best superpower ever.
Right.
It's certainly useful for him.
Undoubtedly. But we have a call in here from our good buddy Carmine.
Hey guys.
Hey.
And I owe him a debt of thanks because he's been handling prizes all day, and prizes is like my least favorite whole part of this whole thing. Like it's always a clusterfuck, and I always lose track of what's going on. And he's been doing such a good job today of keeping track of all that stuff, so that you guys will actually get all your prizes this year.
You know who to blame.
Yeah, or you know who to blame, exactly. But the other thing is, I mean, dude, you're apparently like way into Wing Commander all of a sudden.
Dude, I've been like, I've been having lots of fun in this telethon, and I've just had to sit through like 24 minutes of you guys like dissing this movie. And it's I'm not gonna say
Carmine,
it's
Carmine, let me
movie,
prepare
but it's
you
fun.
For the rest of the world.
No, I get this. I love the Speed Racer movie. Everybody hated it. Okay, so I'm there. But Wing Commander is like this great, yes, okay, so it's not great, it's not this amazing movie, but it's such a great sci-fi backstory because you watch it and you think about the pilgrims, and what they are is they're about evolution. They're about man adapting to space. And actually you have the story of mankind actually killing off this species who has an adaptation to space and then having to having that like genetic pathway halted, and then they can't take it. So that's like this really interesting backstory that they never explore. And yes, it's a submarine movie. You can see that. It's obvious. But this is hard sci-fi, which is always a hard sell. So this isn't just a submarine movie. It's a submarine movie. It's Top Gun. And yes, it's a little bit of superpower, a little bit of like, I have like this history that can let me navigate jump points, which like if you've played like, which I haven't played a lot of Wing Commander, but I played Privateer, so I'm like totally, yeah, jump points, go for it. I got that. I'm totally there with you. So this is like sci-fi brought down to like a real touch point that you can relate to, which is both the submarine movie and the Top Guns, which is like as a pitch is great, and as a movie, I think it works, you know. And then, yes, I mean, I'm not a big player of the games, but you know, you have to take risks with a franchise. You have to adapt it for the screen. I mean, I like watched what is that recent one? Ender's Game, and it feels like they kept too faithful to it. So you have to like deviate out there. You have to make it its own. This movie, judged on its own merits, is its own thing, and I think that's something to be respected. And then I have to throw in a shout out for like this great cast. And maybe it's just because I'm a Anglophile and I love the BBC, and you know, I mean, and just all this acting talent in one place. And I've heard, like, the great thing about Nicolas Cage is that he's a great actor who doesn't know he's in bad movies. And that's exactly what, like, all these cast are doing. They are serious. This is their craft. And I love this movie. I've been holding all of that in for, like, 10 hours. So, yeah.
Do you think Wing Commander is better than Ender's Game?
Yes.
I haven't seen all Ender's Game, so I can't speak for it. But I will say this movie could have been a little bit more Top Gun, because douchey blonde guy who hates pilgrims never says to Chris, "You can be my wing commander anytime."
Well, he doesn't do the Iceman.
Fine.
Yeah. Look, that would be brilliant.
It doesn't really have that context. I just, for me, the Top Gun, what you call the Top Gun parts of it, to me felt like kind of a bad ripoff of Starship Troopers, you know, which was a very recent I love Starship Troopers. It's about 1,000 times more intelligent than Wing Commander.
Oh, it is. It is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I prefer Wing Commander over Starship Troopers. I don't know. Maybe I just like Matthew Lillard over Busey, you know? They're kind of the same guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a hard choice.
Yeah, no, but
again, Starship Troopers was a completely reimagining of the source material. It has all the main events. It comes away with a completely different message. And at least I respect Wing Commander, and I can enjoy it because as a movie, I can appreciate it just on its own merits.
Well, I've never even played a Wing Commander game. I'm not comparing it to the series. I'm not hung up on the inaccuracies or anything like that. I just think it's not good. I think I agree with you, Carmine. I think the backstory is potentially interesting. You know, the idea that humanity has been exploring space for so long that some people essentially were born in space and lived their entire lives in space, and multiple generations who only knew space and had never even been to Earth, and they became so disconnected from humanity that was still, you know, rooted back on Earth, that they ended up getting into a war, and a lot of the spacefaring people were killed off. But then all of that is handled in like only a couple of minutes of exposition here, and it really doesn't have any interesting bearing on what happens in this movie. They don't. It's an interesting backstory that they don't really do anything with, and that's what I can't forgive in this movie.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, I can understand that. But look.
Johnny? Oh, if I can cut in for a second, I can't believe you haven't played the Wing Commander games.
No, sorry. I think I saw someone play it a little bit on Super Nintendo, but that's not really a very good version of it, I'm sure.
Weren't the Wing Commander games like hardcore PC games too, and they were like the first game? I remember being like this kid and hearing it was over a gigabyte, and I didn't even know what a gigabyte was.
Oh man, 6 CDs of like Fursuit Madness. But no, let's back up. The Super Nintendo games are actually really good. They're kind of like those Star Wars games that everyone likes, Wing Commander, or what's
X-Wing.
It called?
X-Wing! Oh my god!
Yeah, it's like that, except good. Get trolled. Donnie, go play the Super Nintendo Wing Commander games. Please. I think you'll really like it.
Hmm. All right, well, okay. we're going to have to say goodbye to Kai because we're going to bring someone else on here. But thank you for calling in, and thank you for being such a huge part of this telephone today. You have made my life so much easier.
Yeah, and everyone out there, give Wing Commanders a chance. You know, you never know, and it's not faith. It's genetics.
Yes, remember, that is not a suggestion. It's an order.
All right. Thanks, Carmine. but we also have...
Thanks, buddy.
We also have Wishy-Washy on the line. Are you there?
Clex, Alex, whatever you want to call me. I'm back again. Hi. I just want to say really quick, hey. I know this might be a little bit of a low blow, but I said in the chat, I need to say it here. Wing Commander... If I had to give it a short review, not recommended except for Chiron.
That's an oldie.
Yes, yes, indeed. So, as I've kind of been anecdotally saying throughout the chat and stuff, my dad dragged me to this movie in 1999. So, that's primarily my memories of this, and he really loved the games a lot. As I said last year, we have a 3DO. I do have known Demolition Man. But we had the Wing Commander games, and they were really well acted. And I think that was my first time I really got exposed to dudes like Malcolm McDowell. And, like, John Rhys Davies plays Paladin in the games, and he's really good. And Mark Hamill's really good, and Biff is really good as Maniac. And there's a lot of chemistry between that cast. And that just goes away when you have a fuck-off guy like Matthew Lillard playing
character. I actually thought Matthew Lillard was so killer in this movie. I thought he was my favorite part of the whole movie.
I don't know. I think we could all agree that they traded up on the cast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, let's be real here. Like, Matthew Lillard is probably the only watchable thing about Wing Commander.
I think, well, maybe that actor is better than the previous one, but overall, I think everybody probably would have been a lot happier if they'd kept the actors from the games. And I'm just assuming they couldn't afford it. They couldn't afford to have those guys in for the entire movie. And so maybe they wanted younger people so they could try to get more of a mass market. I mean, I think Matthew Lillard is kind of okay, but he's sort of just playing Matthew Lillard. Like he always plays the same characters in everything. He's just sort of this jerk off, you know, really aggressive, petulant dude with like no emotional control whatsoever. And that's exactly what he does in this movie. And if that's how it was written, then I guess he was good casting for it.
He has some range. He's played Shaggy.
Yeah.
That sounds like good casting to me.
He was in that one 2010 movie with friggin' Clooney. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, what was it? Michael something? Something or other?
Michael Clayton? Yeah.
Michael Clayton. I think he might have been Michael Clayton.
Yeah, it's been a while since I saw that.
Like a minute. But, Summer Cats! Summer Cats is a pinnacle filmmaking.
Another point I want to go back to that Johnny was alluding to with the whole submarine movie thing with Jürgen Prochnow now there, just being the disgruntled captain commander figure.
He's sort of racist, isn't he?
There's this whole racist undertone with the pilgrims that I don't know. It's a very strange thing for people to be racially afraid of human GPSs, but
the first season of Legend of Korra, where the Equalists want to get rid of their bending abilities.
It's just like that, Stan. It's just like that.
Okay. But benders actually can kill you. Dudes that can... but in all seriousness, there's a scene where they're like in an asteroid field trying to avoid the Kilrathi pursuit ships, and Jürgen Prochnow orders the Tiger Claw to like go up against the floor of an asteroid, and then they all start whispering like sound can travel through space. And it's a very magical scene.
Well, no, I heard a lot of sound in the space. Like every time the camera was outside, they were going.
Speaking of the effects, we actually have another question that I can bring up here. And it's pertinent that we've been talking about Star Wars because this one comes from our friend in Scandinavia, his name being Harrison Fjord. And that his question is as follows. I haven't seen this movie, but I've heard some of the effects are pretty decent for its time. Is there any style or interesting filmmaking techniques at play?
No.
You know, I actually disagree. I think there's like a handful of scenes in this movie that are actually like pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like as far as actual direction goes, like that part where like Matthew Lillard is trying to impress the other girl and like he does like the 360 spin. I thought that's actually shot pretty well. It seemed
they're in the mess hall or whatever, and people are sitting around a table and the camera.
Oh, you mean the Matrix special effect?
Oh well, no, I was not talking about that. Although when I saw that, I was like, "Wait a minute, was this the same year as the Matrix?" Because if so,
I think it was that. Well, they in the credits, there's actually a section where they outsource that time lapse scene to an outside studio, and it might have been the same people who did it for the Matrix.
And you can tell there's a definite difference in the film quality when they switch over to those scenes.
Yeah,
it's really jarring and weird.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it actually reminded me less of the Matrix and more of those popular Gap commercials at the time, where people were swing dancing, then they'd stop and then move the camera around.
Yeah, what was this? In the 1930s? When was this?
Shut up! Some of us were alive, living in 1999.
I was alive. But I just don't remember.
Carl, you probably weren't old enough, but there was a huge swing dance boom in the late 90s. Stan is absolutely correct. And those Gap commercials were probably made by, yet again, the same studio, because I believe they had a patent on that. So I think they invented the camera techniques to do that stuff, and they just started selling it to everybody who would pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps.
And it all came out in 1999. That was the big year. It was a huge fad.
Well, I will say one thing that kind of surprised me about Wing Commander is, like, I kind of assumed it was like a PG movie, but there's like a lot of sex in this movie, or sexy talk.
Very fully clothed,
yeah. But like people are like,
it's all very suggested.
All I'm saying was, if this was like a PG, if it was like a PG or like a soft PG 13, I'm surprised. I was like, man, they're really gonna let this get away for like a kids movie. I was surprised.
Yeah, PG movies have become a lot softer lately.
Yeah. Well, it's also the thing of like everyone else, like I feel like Freddie Prinze Jr. is acting like he's in a like a G-rated movie because he's just so wide-eyed and like, you know, childlike. And right. The rest of he's like Freddie Prinze Jr. in this movie is like Mark Wahlberg in The Happening. He's just like, what? What's happening?
You know, that could just be Freddie Prinze Jr. This is my first Freddie Prinze Jr. movie.
No. That kid's got chops. He's going places.
Well, they just came off of She's All That when they made this movie. So
this is a post She's All That, pre Summer Catch.
Yeah. Well, I think his biggest role was probably as Fred in the Scooby Doo movies.
Yes.
Where he was repaired with Matthew Lillard playing Shaggy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, but Alex is right in that Freddie Prinze Jr., in 1999, the only reason anybody knew him was either you were familiar with his father, Freddie Prinze Sr., who was like a comedian or an actor back in the 70s, I guess, or you'd seen She's All That, which was kind of this breakout teen comedy hit thing, very formulaic, and he was the main lead in that.
And Matthew Lillard was in that too.
Yeah. I think what's surprising is that
weird. They're like the
those
Corys.
Two are like joined at the hip. It's freaking weird.
They're like
weird.
The Corys of the late 90s.
But they didn't have Jennifer Love Hewitt.
They did not. Or Jessica Biel, as they did in Summer Catch.
What? Well, Jennifer Love Hewitt was the bad movie girl of the 90s, with the exception of Can't Hardly Wait. That movie is awesome.
Can't Hardly Wait is good.
But
it's good.
But she was also in that first – I actually kind of like that first I Know What You Did Last Summer movie. Now, I still know What You Did Last Summer was trash. But much like Scream, I feel like the first one's actually like pretty decent.
Hmm. Well, one thing before I bug her out of the call that I wanted to go back to really quick was also on the – when Johnny said wanting a younger cast, I guess that's true because they're trying to the Tiger Claw is the ship you're on board in the first game, and they kind of wanted Blair to be young and not Mark Hamill, who was starting to get up there, because by the third game, like, the Blair character's a grizzled veteran, and so is the Maniac character, which is why they had sort of these older gentlemen playing them in these middle-aged gentlemen playing them in the video games. Mm. So that's about the only logical reason I can think behind the recasts, but anyhow, thank you very much for letting me in here.
Thank you.
It was a ton of fun. I'm actually glad you guys chose this movie over Pokemon, because
I'm not.
But all right. Thank you, Johnny. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for helping us fill this hour of talk about a movie that certainly does not warrant. And we only spent, Carl, last week on Box Office Poison. We talked about Taxi Driver for about 30 minutes, and we have an hour to fill on Wing Commander.
Hey,
yeah.
Wow.
This is a movie's movies. You can have your Inceptions. You can have your Gone Girls, your Trees of Life's. I choose Wing Commander.
Oh, man. Well, he just mentioned Wing Commander on 3DO. You'll never guess what I found here in Japan.
What did you find?
I found the Japanese version of Wing Commander on 3DO. I own that game now.
Nice.
Nice. Now it's. I feel like that's like that, you know, that Portlandia sketch of like the cabinet of Dr. Caligari, where once you own it, it traps you until you can trick someone else into owning it.
Right. Is it, you know, or it's like fake or real. Like this came out.
Mm-hmm. No,
it's the mask from The Mask. If you threw it out the window, it would just fly back and hit you in the face.
Right. Mm-hmm.
By the way, someone's asking if they question if Johnny has actually seen Pokemon the first movie because maybe he's treating it not so well. Look, that movie's fucking trash. Like, that movie's a toilet.
I've never seen it.
The only time I tried to watch it once when it was pretty new and I fell asleep about halfway through it because it was so boring.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things like, well, the only funny thing or only interesting thing about Pokemon the first movie is that Herman Cain quoted it for his presidential campaign. That's about the only thing.
That was amazing.
What was the quote?
It's like, when you believe in yourself and you look inside, you'll find that we can do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like that's not generic or anything.
Yeah, no, it's a direct quote. And then he was like, look, we all want to be the best there ever was. There's only one true test, and blah, 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 freedom is my cause, I guess. Gotta catch them all. Herman Cain. Herman Cain kind of was a Pokemon, though, because like, it felt like all he was saying was his name.
Herman Cain.
He was at least a Meowth level of
exactly. No, he was Meowth tier.
Yeah.
I want to run on the Meowth ticket.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
So Wing Commander. Wing Commander is a movie about people shooting cat people, except you never see the cat people, except when you do, and then you wish you hadn't. And it's also about racism against people who look exactly like everybody else.
No, they
but they have a genetic difference that makes them better at navigation.
Apparently. Mm-hmm. And they also wear these really weird crosses that I guess – At one point, isn't he playing with a cross and like he pushes a button and a blade sticks out? But then they never use that the rest of the movie.
Well, no, but that's an allusion to the huge plot twist that happens at the end when you find out that Taggart is a pilgrim, even though he talks lovingly about pilgrims, knows how to deal with that little pilgrim cross and like knows everything about pilgrims. It's such a shock when he's like, I'm a pilgrim too. Oh my God. Mind blown.
I thought he was going to say like, I'm your father. Like, I thought that's what it was.
That would have been a close day.
Yeah. That might've been a little too Star Warsy, but there's a lot of really stupid stuff in this movie. And there's a scene where Matthew Lillard's girlfriend, I don't remember her name, but she's kind of his like bossy.
Saffron Burroughs.
Angel. No. Saffron Burroughs is the Wing Commander.
Rosie.
Yes. His girlfriend, who I liked her character. And of course, the least annoying character in the movie is the one that they kill off halfway through. And the scene in which she dies makes no kind of sense. Like, it's not clear at all when you're watching it why she had to die, why they couldn't just go out and get her. And it's used as a way to basically make him, I guess, pay for his recklessness and try to come around, but you don't really even see his character change that much afterward. I mean, I guess he just mopes around and they have to go convince him to get back into it. But
well, see, his character arc is early in the movie when he's like totally not a maniac and totally like straight and calm and everything. And then they go through that hole. And then suddenly for the rest of the movie, he's crazy and wild and likes to do crazy stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's his character arc. It happens early on. It's amazing. And it's fantastic acting by Matthew Lillard. And
no, I think
Stan, you couldn't be serious if you tried tonight.
Look, I'm not surprised that Stan loved this. Like, this seems totally up Stan's alley.
He's being sarcastic.
No, I don't think he is. I love
this film both ironically and unironically. It is a paradox.
Yeah. Look, the only acting Mr. Lillard knows is True Life. He lives these movies, all right? He went full fucking method for Wing Commander.
He's basically Edward Norton.
Yeah. He even got Final Cut.
You know what was great about this movie? Was all the gravity. When Rosie dies.
That's why the spaceships have wings, as a matter of fact.
In her trips, her ship is like trapped outside the airlock, you know? It's like,
and so they take a bulldozer and just shove it off the side.
Jump it off and it goes blunk.
That is like
such horseshit nonsense.
That's the one scene that's burned into my head forever from this movie. It's just that.
Bulldozer, I was laughing so hard.
Ship off the space deck.
Yeah.
Let's just push her into the mass grave with all the other dead pilots and move on with our lives. She doesn't exist anymore.
That are seemingly at the bottom of the universe, I guess. No, it was also great is the fact that like all like space movies, I think before like 2004, all space battles take place on like the same plane. Like they sort of all meet from the side as if like there's no way that you can approach from a different angle.
Even dogfights on Earth aren't like that, and much less so when you're in space, right? So that's one thing I love about Ender's Game is that that's not even necessarily, you know, most of that story isn't even about spaceships. It's about kids running around playing laser tag, but at least they take the three-dimensionality seriously, and they actually, you know, they use that to set up interesting scenarios.
Mm-hmm. The enemy's gate is down.
Yeah.
That's the thing though, because like we, you know, our last question was like, you know, was there any sort of interesting filmmaking? And I was like, some of like the practical effects were like the ships are on fire, or like some of the even the special effects look pretty decent for 1999 at least. But then there's like these weird like fall off a cliff moments, like when they go into hyper jump or whatever, and all of a sudden they just sort of like they just do a freeze frame. The actors just sort of like stay still for like a second, and you can sort of see them twitching, and then they jump. It's just like. I dropped off for a second there, but no, it's just like really, really, really terrible. But TYP, I think you're on the line now, aren't you?
Yes, although I don't know anything about this movie, but as someone who has not watched this movie, I found this segment very enjoyable for its sarcasm.
And look, have we sold you? Do you now kind of want to watch Wing Commander just like a little bit?
No, I don't think I want to watch Wing Commander.
Good.
Sorry,
good
Carmine. Call.
Good.
You made a valiant effort, but
it's only an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You should watch the last Starfighter.
Well, look, after I finished Wing Commander, I was like, all right, I saw it, but like, what's this movie about again? And I had to like read the Wikipedia entry so that I'd be like, all right, now I know what happens in this movie. Because it felt like for a while, like it's sort of the whole movie feels like a first act where they're kind of just like setting stuff up. And then it just sort of like, well, is the rest of the movie just going to happen at some point?
Well, it could have been a franchise, but no one wanted to see it.
I checked the running time, and I was like 2/3 of the way through the movie, and it felt like the story had barely started. I mean, not very much happens in this movie, and it could be that maybe the script just doesn't emphasize the right things, you know, and so maybe it just feels kind of lightweight. Mm-hmm. But the scene that we described, where you know one of the pilots dies, is like that feels like the climax of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It actually really happens weird. At the 1 hour mark. That's the special mark where something has to happen that changes everything. I looked. Yeah. I was like, "Oh my god, she's gonna die at exactly 1 hour," and she did. This movie did not let me down.
Yeah, the script really does feel very formulaic, which is too bad. And I wonder if it's one of those things where Chris Roberts, you know, had some success. Now, I've seen some of the cutscenes from the computer games, and I don't think they're that great. I mean, they're much better than, you know, what you might have seen in Command and Conquer around the same time. But I don't think they're like movie quality or anything like that. And it could be that either, you know, he had thought too highly of himself and thought he could just kind of pull off the same crap in a movie, or maybe the skills that made those scenes like effective in the games just didn't translate to a full length movie. But this feels like someone's first script to me. It really does. Cause it's very formulaic and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. I was reading Roger Ebert's review of this movie. Cause he did review it, and it's a doozy. People should check it out. But he said the movie's worst offense is that it was released the week that Stanley Kubrick died. And because as someone who... yeah. It's like, what a send-off for old Stan.
Clearly, his teachings were ignored by the mass populace.
Look, I'm just going to say the space jump in Wing Commander is way better than the space jump in 2001. Can we just be honest here? Can we say this? Can we agree?
Oh, man.
There is no space. Honestly,
2001. Was there one?
Oh, yeah.
No.
No, there is not one in 2001. That's why it takes so long for him to get to Jupiter.
Yeah,
it took like 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
But for real, I mean, the thing is, Wing Commander, it is playing at something, and I never saw the original Battlestar Galactica series, so maybe that would explain some of the crap that goes on in the Wing Commander movie. But the modern Battlestar Galactica is basically a lot of the same ideas as Wing Commander, but it's actually good. You know, I mean, it takes like a hardcore military culture, puts it in space, raises the stakes. It's us against them, and you have a lot of that Top Gun kind of mentality and character development among the core group of pilots. And that stuff really works in that series in a way that Wing Commander doesn't even come close. You know, I mean, when you've got Freddie Prinze Jr. playing the main character, and his character is kind of a non-character. Like the most interesting thing by far about his character is something that's just in the script. It doesn't come out at all through his acting. Nothing he does in the movie helps sell this idea that he's like half pilgrim and this makes him special or anything. He seems to be just hiding from it the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sounds like episode one of Star Wars. The little kid.
A little. Yeah, I could see that. I was asked to say by Carmine that Angel has won the Pure Digital Pack for sending in Red Velvet. So Red Velvet has won him the Pure Digital Pack for Angel.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
That's some really good prizes in there.
Yes, it's the best thing that's come out of Red Velvet yet. so we're actually getting to the end here, folks. We've only got seven minutes left here. We actually have one more prize to announce, so Carmen's going to clue me in on that one in a little bit. But before we go, for the whole telethon, I mean, I really do want to give a huge, huge thanks to Michael Cole, to TYP here, because I think a lot of people don't know how involved he is every year as far as, you know, and him and James as well, in the technical side of all this. It's easy to say, like, we would not be able to do this without him.
Oh, well, I'm sure you could figure something out, but thank you.
But we don't have to because you're here.
You know, things went so well this year that there were no problems. I mean, I just had to babysit a computer that never stopped working, so.
Mm-hmm. Don't speak too soon.
Yeah, oh, there's still time.
6 minutes?
It's not over yet.
delete.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
All right, well, the last winner here, the Pilgrim winner is Matthew Waldack, who wins Club Nintendo Pack 4. So congrats on that. Also, though, as we're going over our thank yous, thank you to Don Koopman, who sort of filled in the other half of the sort of segment producer role today, sort of as I needed to step out from time to time to, you know, eat and function as a human being.
What?
And Don is doing this very late at night in his time zone, so thank you very much, sir, for staying up late and helping out so much.
Yeah, it's a huge help. I mean, honestly, you know, it feels corny, but I have to say it. Thank you to all of you who have been listening. I know some of you have been listening all day. Like, literally, I remember I was in the chat room today at, like probably around, like, 11 a.m. Eastern, or maybe even before that, and people were already in the chat, like, hey, who's here so far? Like, what are we going to do? Like, what are we going to talk about? And so, I mean, some of those people are still in the chat right now. So, I mean, that's very, very flattering. It's very encouraging that we keep doing this every year, because it's I think Johnny would agree with me. This telethon is super, super, you know, revived. It's a great cause, and I think at the end of it, we feel like we've accomplished something, but it is draining.
I'm drained.
Yeah, I'm tired. I'm like sweating. I've been sitting down all day and I'm sweating.
Oh, Johnny, for the last two segments, I've been standing.
Why?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I should do that.
I've been like walking. I've been walking and talking as I've been talking here because it's sort of waking me up a little bit.
That's a good idea.
Get those juices flowing. But I mean, John, you're going to. Yeah. I mean, speaking of space, what do you think is going to be a better space movie, Wing Commander or when you see Interstellar later tonight?
Wing Commander.
I'm really hoping for a lot from Interstellar. There's no way. It's the trailer for Interstellar is better than the Wing Commander movie. So. Mm-hmm. I know what's the result of that battle is already predetermined.
They touch on a lot of the same subjects, like when Matthew Lillard is making out with Rosie, she says like, "Everyone you know and love is dead and buried." I'm like, "Boom, Interstellar." They don't even need to make it.
Mm. By the way, our current total right now is $5,574.75. The telethon will still be running as far as keeping donations up until November 15th. So if we receive enough in the interim time between now and November 15th to supply our stretch goals, we will count that. So when we hit $6,000, you will get To Catch a Prehistoric Predator with Zach Miller. When we hit $7,000, you will get Connectivity Live. And when we hit $8,000, we will get a live episode of Radio Free Nintendo. It'd be great if we'll come back.
That'd be awesome. And if nothing else, today has already been a huge success. We greatly exceeded our primary goal. We got to do Box Office Poison Live, which I'm thankful for because I had to watch the movie either way. So thank you all. Thank you all very much for donating. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's more to come, but I know a lot of people have given us a lot of money. Well, not us, but have given a lot of money to Child's Play to help this thing go. And it's been really exciting. So and you know, we have had so much fun putting on the show for you. We're coming in on almost 10 hours now. In a couple of minutes, it'll have been 10 hours since we started. And it's been as always a memorable day and a completely unmemorable day in that it just kind of whizzed by and I have no idea what just happened. So thank you all so much. And really, it has been a huge team effort from our website staff. There are literally like dozens of people involved in making this happen. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people put a lot of time into it, not only in the preparation, but scrambling all over the place behind the scenes to make this happen. And of course, we had some special guests, and we really appreciate them helping out as well. Some people on Twitter who helped me kind of get the word out, and that's fantastic. So thank you, everyone. And hell, if you listen to 10 hours of this, you are a hero. Thank you very much for supporting us and being a part of it.
Yeah, and, well, and thank think, you.
Don't go encourage ahead. Us.
go ahead, Stan.
I just wanted to thank you guys for having me on. This was a joy, my first time doing this thing, and getting to see such a really cool movie.
Yeah, well, it's appropriate. You know, you at one time were a very big part of Radio Free Nintendo, and so it's good to bring you back to NintendoWorldReport.com, if only for a little bit.
Yes.
All right. Now, everyone who hated him for the Pangaea review, get him.
Get him. All right. See you guys.
All right. Well, I also have to thank our buddy Ty, who spent some time to talk about Wing Commander. Went for of his own volition, he volunteered to do this.
Thank you, Ty.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, same to you, buddy.
So yeah, so I think it's gonna cut it off, folks. It's 9 o'clock Central Time, 10 o'clock Eastern. And that's the end of the telethon. Any last words, folks, before we shut this thing down?
It feels weird to stop.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
It's like when you're running a marathon and you cross the finish line. And you're like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to stop running now. I feel like we're going to just immediately crash right after this when we realize it's over. Our bodies will catch up with us.
I'm going to crash really hard. It happens every year.
Just some quick sort of end of the day stuff. So this will be released hopefully in several installments on the RFN feed as podcast editions. So you can look for that probably within the next week or so. But hopefully we can have the first episode, or at least the first increment of this out in the next few days. So you can hopefully listen and share with your friends, and maybe we can get some last minute donations. Also, I would be remiss if I did not use this opportunity to pimp out my site a little bit. That is, of course, crosstalk.com, spelled crosstawk at gmail.com, where you can listen to conversations like this every 2 weeks on Box Office Poison, the podcast all about movies and movie things. I promise sometimes we talk about better movies.
Yeah, we pretty much always talk about better movies than Wing Commander. So, and I'm sure we'll be talking about Interstellar on the next episode.
Yeah. Although Stan sometimes talks about movies that are of the same tier as Wing Commander. I'm looking at you, Hercules versus Karate.
Hercules versus Karate is the best movie I've ever seen. Up until possibly when we do the next show, because I'm seriously looking forward to Big Hero 6.
Yeah, cool. And then check out all the wonderful podcasts right here on NintendoWorldReport.com. Shows like Radio for Nintendo and Connectivity and Radio Trivia Live. You know, all fantastic shows. Oh, the Famicast, of course.
Yes! The Famicast is on its own podcast feed now. So subscribe to the Famicast. It's on iTunes. It's on our website. It's its own thing now, and it's going to be bi-weekly. Yeah. So you get double the Famicast in your life, but you have to go subscribe to it.
Every year I listen to the Famicast segment. I'm like, man, these guys are fucking good. And then I don't subscribe to the stream. But this year I am. This year I will subscribe to the show, because every year I'm surprised and impressed by how great the show is.
Yeah, Fake or Real is now a regular segment, so please enjoy that.
You never get enough sugar.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, unless anyone has any final words, I think it's time to put a plug on this one, guys.
Nope. Pour some sugar on me.
You're my cherry pie.